This week on RSVMB Update, with 2021 coming to a close, it's time to look back at RuneScape's PVM updates. We start with the Rex Matriarchs and move through the Elder God Wars, touching on the most important patch notes and sleepers of the year. This is RSVMB Update, episode 861, recorded Tuesday, December 14th, 2021. Christmas Crits, RuneScape's 2021 PVM Meta. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVMB Update. Christmas time's fast approaching here. You guys are probably listening to this after Christmas, unless you, of course, want to listen to podcasts on Christmas Day. But, of course, if that is the case, Merry Christmas, and we love spending your time, our time with you for that. And, Tanis, you're here. Welcome aboard.
Thank you, Shane.
And as it is the end of the year, the clip show will be next week. We thought, gee, what was the theme of 2021? Oh, it was the Elder God Wars. Oh, and there was four fronts to that. Oh, and there was lots of other PVM things. Okay, so let's do a year in PVM meta review for the special Christmas show this year. And joining us to do that is David and Thaxi. Welcome to the both of you.
Hello. Good to be here.
Welcome.
Good to be back again.
And, you know, I figure it makes a lot of sense to do this because going into 2021, we knew there'd be a lot of PVM, lots of drops related. We didn't know how substantial they'd be. Or are you saying you did?
Raksha had just come out, and I kind of wasn't expecting any big PVM updates. They'd, like, teased that Elder God Wars might be a thing, but until they actually announced it in March or whatever, I was like, ooh, Rex Matriarchs, cool, that's our boss for the year. Surprise.
Yeah, I was thinking 2022 for Elder God Wars, for sure.
I was too.
And, you know,
pleasantly surprised.
We owe so much to this, because if not for the Elder God Wars, and if not for the both of you, I don't think I would be doing the PVM that I'm doing right now. And I have to say that I didn't anticipate that, and it's completely changed my perspective on a lot of things in game. So big thank you to the both of you on that. But that's also the content at play as well that we have to talk about. And a lot of the changes that we're going to talk about and recap, some of them were fairly apparent and a lot of them were glossed over. But on another note, and this is what I set out to do when we put this podcast episode together, is I said that we can't just look at the high-end ecosystem. We also have to take a look and see about how these updates affected everybody else. Because if we only talk about the high end, this podcast is only good for a certain segment of the population. But we want this to be a discussion about anything and everything PVM meta of 2021. Tanis, do you have any thoughts before we dive in?
No, but I can't wait to talk about the front, the Elder God Wars front, and kind of where it started and where it ended up with some of the accessibility changes that it brought to the game.
Yeah. And what we're going to do is we're going to talk about each of the three combat styles. We're going to go through them in the order of ranged, melee, magic, and then at the end of the day, sum up the changes that were made to each one and where it was at and where we wound up. And at the end of the podcast, we'll have a bit of a discussion about what started off as king and what is king right now. And I think we can start us off with ranged. And the reason I want to start off with ranged is because we wound up in a situation where we had the Rex Matriarchs as being one of the bosses that was going to come out early on in the year. But before that, they had just, in effect, brought out Raksha in December of 2020, which brought Greater Ricochet, which we all know the impact that that had. That's a basic ability worth way too much money as it is right now. And it got toned down a bit in August. It's still one of the most powerful basics. And I think it's fair to say that 2021 saw relatively few add-ons for ranged. And I know both of you guys wanted to talk about the two rings at this stage, the Stalker ring and the Reaver ring from the Rex Matriarch. So which one do you want to go first with as having an impact this year?
Well, I mean, firstly, it is so wild to me that Greater Ricochet is only a year old. Like this, it just was so important to how people did damage this entire year. It feels so wild to me that's only been out for a year. Like, that's so crazy in my brain. Also, just as a note for anybody who's listening who's not familiar with kind of terminology maybe from other games, meta is actually an acronym for like most effective or most efficient like technique or tactic available. So it's like, what is considered to be the best way to do things? And like Shane said, we're going to be talking about the meta at various like brackets of experience too as we're going through these, but just like as a note for people. Yeah. And I think let's start with the Reaver's Ring, because I think that's the good general, like, this was our, of all things, one of the larger hybrid combat updates of the year.
One of the largest hybrid combat updates ever.
Yeah.
I know, David, you were jumping up and down about it when I sent you this doc.
Yeah, because you left it out.
No, I didn't leave it out. I left it. I left
like,
it in
Reaver's
the
ring. Reaver's ring. Who cares about this trash?
I didn't know where to put it. I didn't know where to put it because it was under all three styles.
Yeah,
you put it on your finger, Shane.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild because we've had a lot of things that changed. Handful of things that change accuracy, a ton of stuff that changes and modifies damage you deal, but very few things that modify the chance to critically strike in the game. It was really just kind of the biting perk and the grimoire, which was so expensive it was hardly worth talking about at that point.
Yeah.
For a lot of people.
And I debated putting in those pages being made easier to get this year, but I realized that the grimoire is previous year's item, so I didn't put those pages in. But what I want to ask with the Reaver's Ring, it adds a 5% critical strike chance. So I have two questions with this. Mm-hmm. One, how big is 5% critical strike chance in RS? And how big is a 5% accuracy hit? Because I know in the past we've talked about there being bosses in this game where you're going to have 100% accuracy no matter what you do.
Are we talking pre or post what we're going to describe in the magic?
We're talking about where we are right now in December 2021.
Okay. So
the deal with this is that you crit chance is huge, right? I think we can just put that out there as like, we're going to get to magic and we'll have even larger crit chance increases from the Chandler's Ring and we'll get there. But the thing to note with this is that crit chance is calculated in two ways in RuneScape, right? You've got your base crit chance, your 5%. If you hit within the top 5% of your ability's damage window, you do 20% more damage. And that's lovely and fine. And any crit chance buffs that are, aside from that, are actually a separate role. So all of the biting perk and these rings and the grimoire, and that's why they're so powerful, is that they do a separate kind of critical strike where no matter what your damage would have been, it sets it to 120% of the maximum damage. So whereas the old one, you're getting maybe 20% additional damage. With this, if you say that an ability goes from, let's say, 20 to 100, so your average damage is 60%, this is going to set that to 120. So you're now doing double the damage, which is relatively standard for a lot of RuneScape abilities. You're doing double the damage when you crit, on average, instead of 20% more. So these crit chance buffs
do... And then we're going to add another 5% on top of that, right?
Well, no, because your base crit chance only works still with that top 5% of your damage window.
Okay.
So these rings and the grimoire, like, they do effectively an entirely separate mechanic from what is a traditional critical strike in RuneScape. So hitting these critical strikes is incredibly impactful for your damage output. And so if 5% of the time you do double damage, and that's a very simple, you know, you're doing 5% more damage, is kind of how the math on that works out. And so a lot of things can't crit, right? So bleed abilities cannot critically strike. A lot of ultimate, like damage over time, those kind of things can't critically strike. But for everything that can crit, this crit chance is a big deal. And 5% additional damage from a ring slot was incredibly meta-changing and is incredibly impactful. And so that's one of those things that, like, even without stacking other things on it, like the fractured armored staff, whatever it is that functions with crit, the Reaver's Ring, you're taking a 5% accuracy buff. And accuracy was for the very longest time in RuneScape. This is the, like, I need to be able to make sure that I can do damage and set damage when it's like at necks and nothing. For years and years, this was like accuracy was king. And if I could get a 5% accuracy bump for a 5% damage bump, I would take that any day. So, like, that's the idea with the Elder God Wars, or the God Wars 2 weapons that all have 90 tier 90 accuracy and tier 80 damage. Because it was such a big thing.
And also PVM being locked behind loyalty points for years and years.
For auras, yeah. Because, even, like, the precise perk, which you would think impacts accuracy, is a damage buff and not an accuracy buff. Like, it's relatively challenging to get additional accuracy and relatively easy to get additional damage. So, for the longest time, accuracy was king. What this ring did was, you know, we're going to sacrifice some accuracy because we have reached a point of power creep where we have accuracy to spare. We're going to turn that into crit chance. They've made this new stat that is now the thing everybody wants to optimize for because accuracy is more or less optimized regardless in many situations.
Yeah.
There's a few places you still don't use it.
It's not really power creep so much as just the boss design has changed.
Yeah.
Like, because it's not power creep that makes it so we can hit at Solak and Rakshin and whatnot. It's just that they have lower defense than bosses 2018 and our bosses pre-2018.
Like the Magister was a great example of, like, hit chance. The Magister is ridiculous. That man has defense set coming out of everywhere. Same thing with, like, the raids bosses with Nex. Regular Nex is still one of the most tanky creatures in the game all these years later because that was the idea, was that we don't want you to be hitting all the time. It adds some spice to these encounters. And they moved away from that. They moved away from that big time. We're like, you can absolutely reach 180% accuracy on Solak. Like, it is actually doable.
So the question then at the end of the day is that, based on what we've heard here, and I'm betting that both of you guys have these rings, and you use them religiously, yes?
Yeah.
On and off. I keep a ring of death some places. Like the Stalker's Ring, when we get to that, I do use that everywhere.
All right.
A lot of places.
All right, well, we can kind of pivot to that right now, because I think we just said how big the Reaver's Ring was, and it works for all the styles, and it came with the Rex Matriarchs of all things.
I prioritized getting that for my Iron Man pretty early after it came out, because it's universally so good.
And those bosses are relatively straightforward to, like, you just put in the time to grind them and you will get the drops, which, thank you for that.
Yeah, and I mean, they're one of the Reapers that I will just go out and do and enjoy with that when I get the Matriarchs. Stalker's Ring is the ranged version.
Stalker's Ring is not it.
3% critical strike chance when using a bow.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry to interrupt you there. This is another one of those things, and I'm going to say this for a lot of some of the ranged updates that we're going to talk about in the next few minutes, try to be pretty quicker on the draw with these, but this Stalker's Ring, so range is in a very interesting place at this precise moment in time, where you can get a full set of Serenic armor for 30 million coins, and if you're using bows, which is, the Stalker's Ring only works with bows, if you have, like, an SGB and a Hex Hunter and, like, a couple other things in your backpack, it's really hard to beat a death cost of over 1 mil. Like, it is really hard to pass 1 mil with death cost in a near meta range setup where you are only using bows. So my alt account, just for kicks and giggles, and because I'm upset that people are sleeping on things, will be bows only for PVM. So she's sitting on a lot of money worth of bows. And her death reclaim will never be over a mil. It's like, I will never use a Ring of Death. I'll sick a Luck of the Dwarves into the Monolith when I want to, like, camp something where I don't need extra, you know, relics that require for PVMing. And I will just camp a Stalker's Ring forever, because the reclaim cost on it is 34k, because it is an untradeable item, and that is the reclaim cost on it. It's very cheap. I just have less than five things on me at any given time that are expensive to reclaim. So that's where the Stalker's Ring is currently useful, is that it's just a nice, like, it costs 25 mil, but it is the best in-slot range ring if you're using a bow. And we're just, you know, we were talking before the show about how a lot of weapons are rising right now.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people running around with Nox bows out there. And this ring is a great, that like 3% crit chance on this is just a flat, for those people, it's give or take, depending on the abilities you're using, 3% or more damage increase.
And we're going to paint a picture about bows and arrows as well as we move through the range section with that.
Oh, are we going to do it on caves?
No.
Oh, okay.
You could do a cave painting while Faxi does math, though.
Oh,
oh my gosh. Can you imagine?
It can be good content.
Absolute masterpiece. They'll be talking about it 50 generations from now when it gets dug up in the ruins of our post-apocalyptic society.
Oh my
god. This is the time capsule.
Oh, shit. Yeah, they're going to find RSB and be update episodes.
But they seemed so smart. What happened?
Okay. All right. So, as we progress through Ranged of the Year, comes a patch note that's very near and dear to my heart, because this was your first appearance on the podcast, actually.
Yeah.
The Emerald Dawn Criminal Bolt change. Which...
Yeah.
These... If I remember it correctly, we said that if your target is poisonable, they can be on par with Dragonstone, right? I think that's what
they
said. Better.
I edited that to better in the notes.
They're almost twice as much damage as a Dragonstone Bolt.
Yeah, they're significantly better.
And I need to ask with that, is that if the person doesn't have things like Greater Ricochet, obviously, because that adds more process to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
With a Blood Reaver, where you're getting even more poison damage out of it, this does require that you're using a weapon poison +++. The bolts on their own do not do much, but they have, each time they activate, which is basically every time you hit the thing, it's a chance to activate poison. And that poison damage is considerable. This is assuming Cinderbanes, but it is not assuming any other expensive upgrade. So it's Cinderbanes and Weapon Poison +++.
They allowed for people to be able to fully AFK Grigorovich with Rage and a Blood Reaver, which was quite nice.
And they're about 50% more damage output than Onyx, given they don't have the healing coming off of the Onyx bolts. They get beaten out by rubies against eligible targets and by Hydrix.
Obviously.
And some of the new arrows, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
And otherwise, the incredibly
and,
great bolts.
You know, and this is still something I see, you know, walking into the clan chat, people are talking about what kind of ammunition to use. The answer is if it's poisonable and you're not in a case where you want to use rubies or take it all the way up to Hydrix, Onyx is your thing if you have the Cinderbanes, and that's something I've said numerous times since this patch note has come out. So I think this is definitely one of the sleepers of the year.
Yeah, and I use Emeralds at Solak, except when I'm switching to Hydrix for DPS checks on my Iron Man, just because they're so easy to get.
Yeah.
All right, and once again, simple patch note opens so many doors and possibilities, and that's what we're aiming here to showcase throughout this entire year in retrospective for PVM combat. And after that, it felt like Ranged kind of stayed a little bit flat until Krosis, the skilling boss, came out. Or Croesus.
Did you call it the skilling bug?
The skilling boss. I like the skilling that. Boss. The skilling boss. And, you know, we see this each and every day. I see this in the Discord. I see this in chats everywhere. I don't know if this is the right terminology, but the top end ranged ammunition solution of orthodoxy. I don't know if you guys like that term or not.
Of orthodoxy?
Yeah,
I mean, if you're in terms of being like the religion that everybody you follow strictly.
Yeah.
Strictly followed religion is bolts, because people
Hydrix bolts are bust.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's clear that Krosis made bows compete with Hydrix ammunition by way of splintering arrows. And I'll turn that over to you, Thaxi. Is that we had a long discussion about that when he came out. Do you still feel the same way? Is there anywhere where you wouldn't use splinterings?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, they're still there. When we talked about them, they were, you know, I think 9K a piece. They were very expensive. Currently, they're like, what, 1.5K each?
Mm-hmm. Very cheap. Yeah, or less. Super cheap.
Less. I mean, I don't know that it's been made clear, right? I think the same thing is happening with these as happened with Bicriminal Bolts, where Bicriminal Bolts were released in, what was it, 2018, 2017? Yeah. And people didn't realize that, like, oh, hey, these things do disgusting damage until late 2019, 2020, maybe. And then it took a while for them to catch on, everybody to start using Ruby Bolts, and even longer for people to realize, oh, wait, Hydrix. Oh, my gosh, the damage I can put out with Hydrix Bolts, especially with Essence of Finality being released. That was the big, like, the people who actually do the math and make all the theory crafting, when the AOS came out, you could suddenly dump a ton of adrenaline very quickly. In, but it took a long time, and I think the same thing is happening with these arrows, right? Where splintering arrows, like, if the other thing too is, I think a lot of people don't, frankly, I think a lot of people haven't unlocked the ability to use these. I think a lot of people don't have puncture and salt the wound unlocked from Shattered Worlds,
because those two abilities were panned and paled in comparison to the
bladed dive.
Thank you, bladed dive. From Shattered
and
Worlds.
Even again, I have an alt that has multiple billion gold worth of bows, and that account has bladed dive and does not have salt the wound unlocked yet, because bladed dive is actually just that much more useful for moving around the game world. And so that is still, like, even for low level Slayer, because you can, the cooldown on it resets when you dive to things, like, it's a great ability. These arrows are expensive and not useful for things like Slayer, because you just use tons of them.
You're changing targets so much.
If you're changing targets. So the use for these, right? Splintering arrows, very quickly.
Actually, let me just give a quick recap on what they say on the tin before you do that. So splintering arrows, when you use them, all attacks used for 4.2 seconds after greater dazing shot will also apply stacks of puncture, consuming one arrow per stack during the active period until the target reaches 13 stacks. Reapplying puncture will result in the stack duration being reset to 9 seconds and the bleed damage resetting to its highest hit.
Right. Which is kind of hidden language to say that the damage on these arrows is front-loaded. The first hit does about half the damage of the puncture bleed. So if you reset that bleed every ability, then you get pretty massively increased damage out of it. Combination that with having the addition of additional stacks to it, and more than anything, being able to add stacks in a very rapid rate. So most people can stack this in under 10 seconds. With greater ricochet, you can stack it in under 5. Whereas previously, it took a minute or more to fully stack the ability. And so it makes puncture a viable source of damage for many situations, given you have to consume 10 to 13 of these arrows in order to do that. But it is an incredible amount of damage. And it can be stacked with other things. And then as long as you continue to use Greater Dazing Shot, you actually don't need to even be on the arrows. You can just have puncture running as passive damage in the background while you're using Hydrix Bolts even, right? And so you can stack this with other things. You don't get as much out of the puncture because you're not constantly refreshing it to get that max damage every hit. But it does do pretty massive damage. On their own, these arrows, just used as a main hold switch arrow, no switching at all, they do close to 50,000 damage a minute. Comparison, Hydrix Bolts are going to be about 40 to 45,000 damage a minute if you're dumping that adrenaline under a death swiftness into Dark Bow special attacks. So it's... I go back and forth on this, but generally speaking, I do believe these arrows are incredibly powerful, and it can be a great addition to using with other ammo, as long as you can maintain attacking your target. The issue here is that if you stop attacking your target for more than 9 seconds with a two-handed ranged weapon, the stacks will go away, and you lose that benefit.
And then you got to fire off those arrows again.
Right, so targets that have a reflect ability, or that have an immune, like the Arc Glacier when the minions come out, like Virago's Reflect, like Web Shield at Rax, they make these arrows more expensive to use, because you have to restack them. So it's something you have to be thinking about. You know, so that is something that maybe drives people away when there are other options to do damage elsewhere, like magic. But I think these arrows are very strong. And have been... People will eventually figure that out, I imagine. Or if they don't, then cheaper ammo for me.
Yeah, and, you know, for most of the PVM things I do that doesn't have those phase changes in them, and even if they do, you know, have one or two phase changes with them, I will be using these arrows with the Nox longbow.
Absolutely.
Karapak comes to mind as a...
Karapak's one of the best places to use these. You never lose stacks on him.
I use it at God Wars 2. I don't know if that's a good idea. Vindictive?
Yes. I mean, okay. It's 13k per kill. You're going to make more money off of it, out of it. In theory, it should actually do enough damage to heal you back to save you food. Almost equivalent values in food if you're soul splitting for a lot of those bosses.
Right.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because also remember that each one of these splintering hits also can activate poison. Part of that huge damage number is that, like, you also, every 1.8 seconds, you're firing off an additional hit that can do poison damage.
And this is, of course, once again, it seems like so far in ranged, we're talking about continual sleeper after sleeper with these. Do we feel the same way about death spore arrows? Have you worked those in anywhere, either of you?
Yes. They are part of the best in slot available rotation right now. At least mathematically, on a target that, you know, you don't have to deal with mechanics on. So situationally, it may be challenging to use them.
Because they have to be
comparison.
Because they have to be swapped with Hydrix, right?
Well, they have to be stacked, and the issue with these is that you must time them. They require you to react to the cooldown of them while you're managing other things. So they add something else you really need to be thinking about in the middle of combat, which is a challenge to integrate into a rotation. Right. So quickly, when they activate, they add a stack to themselves. At 5 stacks, your next ability is free. When they are on, then go on a 60-second cooldown, and every time you activate them after that, it shortens the cooldown by 2 or 3 ticks, game ticks. What you can do with these is you can time it so that you have them proc 8 or 9 times. They activate every time you critically strike, which again, critically striking is important for a lot of these things. If you activate them with a ton of buffs, right, this is an expensive setup to use, you can activate them 8 or 9 times within 20 seconds, which is enough to say that you can activate these exactly once a minute if you use them for the last 20 to 22 seconds of every minute with the right setup.
And once again, just based on what you said there, you got to keep that time in your head while doing everything else you do when you go PVMing.
What I've been doing with these is that we'll talk about this in another time, but planted feet perk makes you have a 38-second death swiftness. And the building to these with these is to every minute you activate your death swiftness for free. So assuming that you're in a place where you can stand still and just damage something for a minute, you get 100% free adrenaline every minute. The comparison is Hydrix bolts, which all of the same setup and buffs. Hydrix bolts will give you 122% adrenaline a minute on average. That's average proc chance with the full set of buffs and everything, very high tier setup. Which is to say that these give you most of the benefit of Hydrix arrows, but you kind of have to time it and know when to use it. And so, but also you only need to activate them for 20 seconds a minute. So, like, the idea with these is that you, when you're not under a death swiftness, you pop on your death spore arrows to decrease the cooldown and then stack. And as soon as that proc activates, you then activate your death swiftness for free. And then you can swap back to Hydrix or something else, right? And so again, very expensive to use because you then require to have a two-handed crossbow or just, you know, some kind of crossbows in addition to the bow you're using with these. Which could just be a full set of tier 90s, right? This could be something that is less than 500 mil total, but still expensive.
So once again, we've gone from entry level with Emerald Bolts all the way to talking about 500 mil setups here in the span of a few minutes. And once again, this is the whole spectrum that we want to show here.
And you can do some interesting things with these where you're using 3 different ultimate abilities within the space of about 10 seconds. out incredibly massive damage and then allows you to generate afterwards well over 600% adrenaline in the next 20 seconds. You can do some crazy adrenaline manipulation. I am. I'm doing this when I'm trying to like do dummies and a lot of my solo content and raids. I've been using these.
All right.
I unlocked my Eldritch Crossbow a couple of weeks ago. I got enough money for it because I gotta die. Lovely. So I've been having a ton of fun. I'm just using a Noxious Longbow for these because I don't have an SGB on that account, which is hilarious. But I've been going back and forth between an ECB and a Noxious Longbow to use to stack these arrows up and actually use these at like raids and places because it's really easy. Each one of the Yakumaru pools is about a minute. So I pre-stack Death Spore on the central pool and then we'll activate that and like use these to the rotation there. It's an incredible amount of adrenaline that you can pump out if you can get like an incendiary shot into Death Swift with a natural instinct on it and just generate, like, you can generate over 100% adrenaline on average with a single greater ricochet. Like,
is anyone else doing disgusting. This?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I've not seen anybody else using these anywhere. But they do, in terms of adrenaline gain per second, they are more efficient than Hydrix bolts.
I think the reason that you're not seeing people use them is because the Fractured Staff of Armadale is in the game.
Yeah. People can put out more damage on magic, more good to magic.
So what I'm getting here is that
I will say I think the reason the arrows aren't super popular is just that ECB is pretty good. And people like having it, and it's just like it's so difficult to manage how fast most bosses phase if you're, because obviously like you can't switch to your bow while your ECB spec is up.
No, and most places things are dying and moving, and you don't want to be under a Death Swiftness while you're doing this much damage. Like it just actually doesn't make sense because you're not going to be under that Death Swiftness for very long.
So we basically got a case here of a monopsony where Tanis is one of the suppliers supplying mainly to Thaxi with these arrows.
Yeah, and I think that while the arrows are very competitive with Hydrix without factoring in an ECB, I think I'm not sure that it is if you factor in owning an ECB and a Saren Godbow EOF and a Dark Bow EOF.
At that point, people are buying magic and doing more damage because the FSA is crazy.
Yeah, that's true.
This is the, like, people like me who just enjoy range. This is the, like, I have fun new toys because I am still ranging things with the full knowledge that there are things out there that can do better. So
I think if you don't own an ECB and can't afford to get into the magic game, I think Splintering Arrows are very good.
Yeah, I mean, I will be using both of these arrows. I will be using Death Spore arrows for half of the second half of a minute to have them ready for Death Swiftness, and using Splintering Arrows for the other half of the minute on my alt, because one, bow only, and two, that is potentially best damage. Like, that is going to out-damage, I believe, camping Hydrix. Actually, it's more adrenaline gain and more damage, I believe, than camping Hydrix. Like, the ECB spec is gross, and SGB spec is gross, and like all these things that range is doing.
Eldritch Crossbow and Saren Godbow, by the way, if anybody was wondering what those, those mean.
Yeah, and plus, people are bringing an easy K-switch for range now, too, for Ingenuity.
Oh my god. You're kidding.
It's very good.
I've not seen that yet. That's hilarious.
Range,
that's terrifying.
Range has the adrenaline to do it. So like the like minute 40 second kills you see. The reason it's like six majors, one ranger is because the ranger is easy K.
Is easy K. So that's amazing.
I'm betting that David wants to move on to the melee section here in just a minute because I heard that word come up.
I like range more than melee. That's for sure.
This is the tier 95 two hand.
Yeah.
People are using on range. It's kind of like when people were using Saren Godbow's special attack on other combat styles because was so good. Anyways, yes, one last thing.
Go for it.
The cape.
Yes, the Zuck cape. Igneous Kelzil.
Yeah. It makes Deadshot an ability that hits four times and does, 600-odd% damage.
For 60% adrenaline only.
For 60% adrenaline, which... Comparison to this is the Dark Bow, which is 65% adrenaline for When you include it underneath the Death Swiftness, about the same amount of damage. Difference is the number of time it hits. Which,
yeah, and it can be lower because Vigor. I mean, I don't know if like everyone is switching to a Vigor for their Devo specs, but
right. This didn't do a ton for range. It is situationally very useful for like the last phase of Nex. It's one of those things that like isn't used all the time. If you don't have an EOF, this is awesome. This is a great. You now have the ability to Darkbow spec once every half minute.
I've been using it a bit, and I think I honestly prefer the Darkbow spec.
That is the correct preference, yeah. Shane.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Deadshot good is job. Situation. Like there are situations where Deadshot is slightly more damage, but unless you do a lot of PVM and thinking about it, like it's. Darkbow works everywhere. This doesn't work everywhere. So like
it's just Zaro's phase on next. That's all right. That's where you, this
Tannis, any questions about any mid high level beginner range stuff before we move on to Malik that this might have spurred in your head?
Nope. It's all Greek to me.
Oh no, that's not good. That's not good. Well, I hope that's not the case. I hope everybody else was able to largely understand what we have just said here. And if not, I deeply apologize for that. Let's move on to the melee section right now. And I threw this one in here, Lanikea's Spear for Slayer.
It's awesome.
For everything.
Okay. Yeah, it's the most accessible. It's the first good weapon that's accessible after, like, the Dragon Rider Lance got expensive with Aftershock components being good.
I didn't see this until you guys... Like, I knew it was out, but I didn't see it being useful until you guys told me about it. Because what initially put me off was the set tier 75 accuracy.
Yeah, well, if you wanna get your mid-tier PVM set up while getting charms at the same time, you could go do trash mobs at E3 with this thing for... like 20 hours and you'll have 250 mil. So it's a very cheap way to be able to make money.
My main has a perked one of these that is going to be used to farm the strength pet. I've got 3 pets to master of all. That's absolutely happening in D3. My alt has one of these and will not be net buying a scythe. It's just, I don't need one.
There's almost no reason to own a scythe.
This honestly does more damage than a scythe to anything that is poisonable and equivalent damage. The issue, like everybody says, is the accuracy. If you have level 99 attack and you are using either some variety of overload or a turmoil or higher prayer, you will not miss on anything other than a very few select Slayer monsters and a handful of those like 2010 to 2016 kind of a few of those very high tier bosses during that time frame. Most of whom you're not trying to melee anyways. Like again, bow account. Hello. The spear, there's no reason for me to own a scythe. The spear will do everything the scythe can do for me. So if not more damage on a lot of poisonable Slayer monsters. So
you're saying I should get one of these and change my Slayer setup out from a scythe to this?
And it's one of those things you kind of have to judge it. I don't know if I would necessarily... Like, my main still owns a scythe.
Yeah.
Very clear about that.
It's a good weapon.
It's very good.
Does it have 100% accuracy at Soul Devourers? Because if it does, you don't really need a scythe.
No. Most of the Soul Devourers are magic weakness, and so it'll have an affinity of, like, somewhere in the 45 to 65 range, which is a no.
Okay. Yeah, okay, gotcha.
So like you cannot use it for very high tier Slayer for like it wouldn't work for those. It wouldn't work for a couple of the Raptor monsters.
Would you use it as Wyverns?
Wyverns aren't poisonable if I remember correctly.
I don't think so, no.
So no.
Dark Beast.
I would use Drygors. I would use Drygors or even the tier 85 Glacier weapons actually potentially there.
Okay. We'll talk.
Or Fury Blades.
Dark Beasts, Abyssal Demons.
Absolutely, unquestionably that best in slot weapon for killing those things. Yep.
Abyssal Demons,
Abyssal Demons and Dark Beasts both. This is the best in slot available weapon in game to kill those things. That's not a question.
Alright, so the story that we missed when the Rex Matriarchs came out then And the way things seem to have settled is that the Rex Matriarchs drops, including the rings and this spear in particular, have really settled into a nice place in the entry to mid-level PVM side of things.
Well, I think the spear is like 12 mil, too. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's somewhere 12 to 15. The issue with the rings, of course, is that Chandler's ring and the Reaver's ring, which is magic expensive. And hybrid, are 100 mil. And the Champion's ring, which is the melee one, isn't useful because it doesn't, you can't crit on bleeds, and if you're doing a bleed build for melee, it's not, doesn't do anything for you.
Oh, lo and behold, that's the next thing in the notes here. Champions.
Ta-da!
Champions.
So that's what we have to say about that.
Okay.
The poor Champion's ring is not useful. It costs 25 mil to make it. You just don't get 25 mil worth of damage out of it. Like, spend your money on buying a Drygor.
The only scenario it becomes useful, and I think it might honestly be worth buying if you just have like money laying around, is if they ever do something like give us an ability where every hit of bleed damage gives us 1% adren or 2% adren or something like that. Maybe then it does something. I don't really know.
I mean, it's one of those things that, like, if you're going to be like, if you're running a heist, you're melee setup because you just like melee, and you have a grimoire because you have a lot of money because you just like running melee, then I would buy it because you have crit chance it's going to activate it. And you're stacking crit on top of your already bleed build. But for most people, it's not entry, it's not mid-level. This is the, like, top tier of almost useless, but maybe.
Yeah, maybe one day.
Why it's cheap.
So how did it end up in that position then?
Melee is very bleed-focused.
Okay, because it seems like we've had a year where everything that they've added has amplified power, whereas this would have just fell flat.
Given the price point, like, so on release, no one cared about the Chandler's ring because Magic was the bottom, was the skeleton with the, like, weight attached to it in the chair at the bottom of the ocean. And I bought I got my Chandler's ring for like 30 mil total, including the 10 rings. And now it's 220, 240, 300. I don't know. It's a ton. So if there is a melee change or if it gets buffed, this thing can increase by 10x easily. But, you know, not everyone has 25 mil to just burn.
Okay. So the lesson out of this then should also be, along with the Rex Matriarchs, if you're getting into PVM, go farm the Dagonoth Kings.
Well, the Dagonoth Kings and Thentraken, because the Heart of the Seer is currently 91 mil.
Yep. And that's
the ring itself is 230.
And that's who I do whenever I get the Matriarch's Reaper. All right. So, of course, with melee, everybody always comes down to, you know, we have the tier 92 masterwork and whatnot, of course, and everything around melee is focused on the AoE abilities with the two-handed weapons. But the Archglacer brought the tier 85 and tier 95 dual-wield melee weapons. And one of the things that has put me off dual-wielding since the beginning of EOC was that there were fewer AoE attacks for dual-wielding than two-handed weapons. And if you wanted to dual-wield with Slayer, you were missing a couple of AoE abilities. But these weapons, the tier 85 and the tier 95 weapons from the Archglacer, fix that because they enable abilities like Hurricane to be used with dual wield.
Yeah, kind of. The Scythe and Spear have such longer range, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just makes sense.
A lot of higher tier Slayer monsters are greater than 1x1 square. It's hard to hit more than one thing with a one tile melee range. Which is the challenge with these, right? So, like, single target damage, dual wield has always been better, right? Destroy just does massively more single target damage than Hurricane does. And Flurry... Flurry's an adventure. But
Flurry is very good when used correctly.
Flurry's very good when used correctly.
With the Zerk interaction.
Greater Flurry is incredibly great and useful. Regular Flurry...
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Regular Flurry is pretty hit or miss.
We don't use regular Flurry, but Greater Flurry is very good.
And it gets used kind of like Bombard does with range. Like, it's the threshold you only use when you hit multiple things with it, otherwise it's not good. Anyways, we're losing the plot. Sorry, that's on me. Totally on me. But yeah, so these basically add you use Dueled when you're using your single target, right? Like, if let's assume that we're not incredibly high tier yet, we're just talking like people doing Slayer. If you're doing targets that are going to be doing enough damage back to you that you don't want to be attacking multiple of them at once, then you use Dual Wield, because Dual Wield Destroy does more damage than Hurricane. You don't want to aggro the things around you with Hurricane. So like that's like Dual Wield now has the ability to also use Hurricane on those spread out enough single targets with these. That's cool. It almost makes me want to try the tier 85s versus Drygors. They're similar price point for Slayer. Because that is a pretty good, like, right, you're losing 5 to 6% damage with those five tiers of weapon to gain Hurricane damage. And is Hurricane damage going to be 5 to 6% damage increase? Probably. So it's potential that these are, like, for people who are doing mid-tier, low-tier, kind of tier 90 weapons for Slayer, these are not bad. They're decent, right? Especially, if you've got, like, if you do have the money to buy just one weapon, you've got 1.5 billion, you love melee, you buy a dark Shard of Leng, the sword, and you buy the offhand dagger tier 85, and you can use those for Slayer, and that's okay.
Yeah, because the set bonus does pair between the tiers, so that's important.
Yeah, I mean, you end up with tier 92 damage when you do that, right? When you use the tier 85 offhand with the tier 95 main hand.
I just want to also point out, one thing that really jumps out with the tier 85 ones is that for people doing Archglaze or normal mode, this is a kind of weapon to me that jumps out as farmable, especially with the Nihilus and the Glacier Remnants that you can get.
I think a lot of people doing Archglaze are doing zero mechanic. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe there's a bunch of people doing... I mean, five mechanic is pretty good money, I guess. That's fair. People could be absolutely doing that for farming, even the common drops that are pretty good.
Yeah. And with the nerf, it's probably better than doing low in rage Glacier if you want consistent, decent money.
Probably. So I love how you say nerf while they increase the drop rates for a lot of these things, but it just is harder to get the core of Leng at low in rage and killstreak, which is probably how that should have been from the beginning, but also it is a nerf to getting the tier 95s. But yeah. So anyways, that's my deal with these, is that like the tier 85s are, I'm not going to say slept on because they're appropriately priced. But the tier 85s are nice for the lower to mid tier people. The tier 95s for specific bosses where you want to be doing single target damage, if you don't want to be switching, maybe if you're doing like God Wars 2, like it's a lot of like, you don't use these at a ton of really high tier. They're like, oh, hey, I just want to have more damage. They're 3% more damage or whatever than tier 92s. That's cool. In terms of using them as a main weapon, otherwise, they're nothing like crazy power creep to super duper special. If you're not camping a weapon.
And David, I know you said that there are two places where you specifically enjoy them.
Two really good places. ED3, they're great at ED3 because Terraket falls over really fast, because the problem with the spec is that for the most part you can't actually do high enough damage to take advantage of it, but because Terraket is undead, you get to use the Undead Slayer perk, the Salve Amulet E, and Undead Slayer Sigil, and so you can pump out 20k hits in phase one and just basically insta clear it.
And for the record, the special attack that you're talking about is it increases the hit cap. So normally your hit cap for damage is 10,000 for normal and 12,000 for crits, and this increases it by a margin, which then increases with Smoke Cloud and with a Grimoire active to allow you to hit up to 20,000 damage at a time, which normally isn't possible without like an Undead Slayer Sigil and Undead Slayer perk, and like you can stack a bunch of buffs that specifically damage Terraket that like allow you to hit very, very large numbers very consistently.
Yeah, so if you want to spend 2.5 bill to just nuke the middle boss of ED3, these are a real good time.
And then,
is your next one a joke?
The difference, well, also tier 85s would be fine, to be honest, but the difference between, for hard clues, a single Hurricane kills Yuri, whereas Assault takes longer to do. So you're like, you're literally wasting ticks if you're not using cold cuts for hard clues.
Your hard clues have to be done that 0.6 seconds faster, dog. It's really important.
Yeah.
Or I guess 1.8 seconds.
Yeah, every Yuri you save 1.8 seconds if you use tier 85s instead of Drygors.
I don't do a lot of clues. Is I don't know how many hard clues you hit for Yuri and you know,
but mages. It's the same price. It's the same price as Drygors, right? So if you're gonna do like 500 hard clues, why would you not?
You mean the tier 85s?
Yeah, because Hurricane.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the tier 95s for Yuri.
Yeah, you were talking about the tier 95s as well.
Oh, no. But, I mean, if you have them, you may as well use them for Yuri as well. But,
I mean, like, I was about to say, this is the, like, you're talking like the people that have bought, I know a couple people that have bought Eldritch Crossbows for 2.5 bills specifically to kill wizards on Elite Clues. I'm like, okay. Okay. Yes,
but,
and they're running
but
around
now,
in Legacy. To, yeah.
Best in slot for hard and master clues is being able to Hurricane Yuri. So no, not a joke. I'm 100% serious.
Yeah, believe it.
If you're gonna do a big hard clue run, buy these. You will have a great time. I promise.
The tier 85. So that makes a lot of sense.
The tier 85. Where would you use the tier 95s? Dare ask.
I mean, everywhere. Okay. Tier 95. Yeah,
if you could afford them everywhere. But like the only place that they're a meaningful upgrade is Terraket.
Okay.
Or if you really have a vendetta for Yuri and just want to put him in his place.
Really grave this man.
Yeah.
Also just single target enough, right? If you're camping dual wield somewhere, like if you're just chilling with like an offhand defender or something at Hellware, or like there's a few places where you could like it's just gonna be best in slot damage, but yes, it's expensive. That's it.
And then if we ever get another undead boss, it'll be great there, or potentially a demon boss. I don't know.
Well, Darklight is already like a tier 108 off tier 98 man. So like, but yeah.
And then for dragon bosses, undead slayer or dragon slayer plus, it's just not enough. It's really just places you could use the salve amulet. So if they release more bosses where we could use the salve amulet, then this
forget
would be
the salve
incredible
amulet
for those.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what puts it over the like, top for Terraket.
The issue is that it is challenging to break the hit cap where you would need the special attack, which is the only thing that sets these tier 95 swords apart. Other than like, you have Hurricane now, congratulations, you do 6% more damage. If you're weapon camping, most people that have that kind of money are not weapon camping. Already have Hurricane ability. So situationally they're really cool. They allow you to use extra melee ability if you Hurricane with them on, but the special attack, in which would be a lot of the gain, is not useful because we do a lot of damage but not enough to consistently break the hit cap.
All right, well, speaking of melee and things that need to be swapped around, we need to talk about the tier 95 sword that comes from Zuck, otherwise known as the Easy K or Exakill. And
for a long
time, for what felt like weeks after this boss came out, it felt like it was a mythical drop.
Are you love or hate on the aesthetic? Because I think people either love it or hate it.
I saw a Third Age dyed one the other day. I was not a huge sell on it before, but hot dang, that black edge with the white veining in the center looked really good.
I mean, when I see this sword walking around, you know, back in the day they had replica god swords that they took to Runefest and they had props of, right?
Yeah.
I can totally see Mod Mark walking around with one of these.
Ooh, they should do that. Maybe that'll be like part of their, when they bring Runefest back, that'll be how they announce the melee buff. As well as
I cannot.
Everyone walking around with those.
I don't even know that you could, even I, like you'd have to put a broom handle inside of it or something to give it enough stability. Because the handle on this thing is teeny tiny. And that blade, even, I don't know that there's a, you have to use some real interesting materials to make that blade, one, liftable and like, man, this thing is so massive. Like, it's the sword. If you make that scale, it's like 5 feet tall. That blade would be almost 2 feet wide. Like, it's the size of me.
Tannis, can you get your boy Elon on it?
Dude, I don't know. He's really busy building big cylinder shaped rocket ship.
He should send a 3D printed EZK to space. I think that's what we need.
If you heat molded plastic to the right shape, you could probably do it, and then you'd have to just add a whole bunch of internal structure, like a broom handle or something that would, like, I think you'd have trouble. Like, a god sword has a long enough handle that you can kind of manipulate it, and it's a thin enough blade. This would weigh a ton as a cosplay.
And that's why you say it's strange.
And that may be its best use, because hot dang, this thing is... It does an awful lot of damage.
It's good with range. It's good with range. Okay?
I just want to say that in looking at this, in what you produced on this, David, I just, you know, kind of sat here just looking at the screen when it says, this basically requires an essence of finality to take advantage of bleed extension synergy provided by the Trim Masterwork Spear. In other words, you're going to be using the Trim Masterwork Spear as your primary weapon, and you're going to be putting this in your EOF.
So I'm going to, like, add a nice, hefty caveat on this and try to put some positive spin. Melee is in a very interesting place right now. If Melee had unlimited adrenaline, if Melee had some Hydrix Bolt equivalent, Melee would rival magic in terms of damage, probably. I haven't done this math, but Melee will do massively more damage than it currently does. And that is a good thing and a bad thing in my brain, because obviously, like, you have all these tools, you can't use all of it at the same time, which, sorry, but Melee Switchscape is already ridiculous, personal opinion, hear me roar. But, like, Melee, of all the styles, Melee has two ability books that it pulls from, so it came into 2013 even, with more abilities than everybody else. It was the one that had Zerk. Like, Melee was king in terms of you had variety and choice, and the choices you made mattered. This is one of those situations where, like, I think you could camp, like, a pair of the tier 95 dual-wield swords, the Arclesor swords, with one of these or a ZGS, get similar damage to, like, great, like, you've got a whole bunch of configurations you can do, all of which use all of your adrenaline, and all of which do a lot of damage, but relatively similar damage. Like, it feels like magic and range is pretty much a, like, I can tell you, you bring these items, you equip these items, you switch to these items at this time, in this order, and you do the most damage. Melee, I feel like, has options. Like, where range and mage are, like, this is the thing you do do the damage. The most damage. The most efficient, most effective technique, tactic available damage.
I forget.
Melee is the, like, you can use this sword or the other big sword.
Yeah, and I forget which one I was discussing this with, but it basically came down to the fact that there's about five different possible switches that you can bring, and the cost of it is just so prohibitively high.
Well, I mean, a meta melee setup right now includes some number of things in EOF, plus, a pair of dual wields, plus a pair... Plus the Masterwork Spear of Annihilation, plus the ZGS or an EZK or, you know, whatever it is. Like you end up with, I think it's five or six. Like, you've got a scythe in there for clearing things because you need scythe range or a Lani Chaos, depending on where you are. Like, you end up with an inventory that is more switches than any other style other than a hybrid. But melee just has options, right? You can set up a lot of different melee inventory setups to do similar things with very different setups. So, I don't know. I think that that's cool, but feels bad because you can't use all your toys. That anybody can get a hold of this thing.
David, have you bought one of these yet?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I don't buy gear on my main anymore. I'll get one for my Iron Man for sure, though.
Okay.
At some point. All right. It's just very low. It's like the lowest priority of all these tier 95s.
All right.
Yeah, agreed.
All right.
Three, but yeah.
How much of an impact did it have, though?
Compared to where we were
before Zach.
In some ways, close to none, in the sense that everywhere except hard mode Carapac, you have to pick this or the ZGS. And while this is slightly better, it is slightly better than the ZGS. It's not like a straight buff over nothing. It's a tiny improvement over a weapon we already had, and you have to pick between the two. Except at hard mode Carapac, where of course you get to use both, since you could use time skip to basically give melee adrenaline.
Very slightly speaking, a ZGS, you cannot move when you activate a ZGS spec, and you have the ability to do to split your damage across multiple targets. With this thing, you have to be able to attack your target for an extended period of time with your bleeds up. You have to want all of your damage on a single target. It's like those are your kind of your levers for like when do I want to use one versus
the
other.
And
FYI,
the ZGS we're talking about is the Zaros God Sword, not the Zamorak God Sword. Just want to throw
The Telos weapon. But like, situationally you can make either work, and situationally there are little triggers that make one better than the other. But like you say, like hard mode care pack example, where this is you can use both. But
and of course, this entire combat style in terms of competing with even mid tier magic or mid tier range is locked behind a 500 mil codex. It's like it literally can't even come close to competing with budget setups of the other two styles unless you have Greater Barge. Although, once you have Greater Barge, melee really becomes very interesting.
Melee requires high effort, though, to pull that off, right? Melee has much better AoE damage, as has been noted with the Lanya Ks and the Scythe for things like Slayer. But in terms of single target burst damage output, need Barge. And then you have to be really paying attention to your rotations. Like, melee is one of those that benefits more than any other style off of full manual, because tracking your ability cooldowns and knowing exactly when to use what is more of a skill with melee, because you have a wider array of options.
Yeah. And, like, and it kind of requires switching more than any other, because Cleave and Decimate don't share a cooldown. So It weirdly is like the most important of all the switching you might do. That's like maybe the most important. So it's the highest effort style for the highest effort for the lowest damage right now.
Well, yes, correct. Yeah, you'd get higher effort on doing these wild ammo switches for range or wild
that's
spell and four ticking switches for magic, which magic is off the wall. But in terms of like being able to do baseline damage for high end PVM. Melee is the highest for that baseline damage. Melee is the highest. You can pull off no ammo switching, and you can pull off, you know, G-Conk camping. The other styles. Melee, you kind of have to be doing a two-hand dual switch with barge and timing your barges.
And this raises a big question that I had with this going in. It's for me, it seems obvious where I might use magic, where I might use ranged. But for me, unless it's something that is relatively low level, speaking from my perspective, like God Wars 1, like the Queen Black Dragon, or anything of that tier, I don't see a use for me to use Melee right now.
Slayer.
Well,
no,
obviously
you don't do
Slayer.
A whole lot of Slayer lately.
Yeah, Slayer is one.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think
that,
if someone doesn't have much EP other than buying Tier 85s for hard clues, I wouldn't spend any money on melee right now. Unless
melee
you're
is good.
Just doing Slayer, I guess. Then get a spear.
I would use melee for some elite dungeons just for the mobility of having bladed dive.
That makes sense.
If you're going to try to camp a style, you don't want to bring bladed dive switches. I would do similar things for something like a fight cave or fight kiln, potentially. Then you have to bring a scythe range for Jad, because getting melee by Jad is bad. just throwing it out there. But because you do have access to the AoEs, anywhere that you're fighting a horde or moving around a lot, like barrows, you can do melee barrows because you don't have to worry about accuracy.
That's another one. Yeah.
Regular barrows. But like, oh, all of the tens of people doing barrows, you know? They're like, not. So,
all right. Let's talk about the cape then. Which we've talked about the magic cape so far, and the cape that comes from Zuck. Once again, best in slot.
Wait, did we skip halberd?
You mean the dragon halberd change? Oh, I chucked that in at the end.
I chucked that in under miscellaneous, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, fair
enough. We should make a note that for the Essence of Finality users of the world who do not want to spend 6 bill to put something into their Essence of Finality, the best single target melee damage is ability is Dragon Claws. But very close to it is now the Dragon Halberd. Patch note a couple weeks ago that nobody mentioned or said anything about. Dragon Halberd.
We did.
Does more damage. Yeah, we did. Than a Dragon Dagger or Dragon Mace. And does an AoE sweep in front of you that does do scythe range. It effectively is great for like Slayer and for any of these places where you're doing large clear, like we're talking about, any AoEs. If you're using a Halberd range weapon, having a Dragon Halberd spec in your EOF will do go a very long way.
It's great. Great for P4. Great for P4 Solak. It makes run skipping really easy.
Also, because it's for
30 adren instead of 50 is pretty relevant.
If you're doing melee Telos for some reason, clearing minion clear for that, minion clear for Rax on P3 if you're learning Rax. Dragon Halberds are fairly cheap if you have an EOF and you're trying to do these things. It's just good minion clear. It's good Slayer clear.
All right, yeah, that's good we mentioned that. How do you guys feel about the cape, specifically with how it impacts overpower?
Cape is just like everything else in Melee. It's fantastic in theory, but terrible because we don't have the Adren to use it. If we had the Adren to use it, it'd be sick, but we don't. So the only time you get to use it is if you get a Relentless proc.
What I'm going to say about these capes is the capes are something that if you are familiar with the Zuck front, or if you don't have a lot of money, if you're running an alt, if you're, you know, a true like mid or new tier PVMer and you don't have a ton of money laying around to buy these tier, like buy a Zarro's God Sword or buy an EZK, you may need an adrenaline dump.
And that's the boat that I was in, and that's why I said I find the use of overpower sometimes comical at things like God Wars 1 or the Queen Black Dragon.
Yeah, if you don't have an EOF with a good melee weapon in it, it would actually is pretty useful.
Melee has a lot of adren dumps that cost an incredible amount of adrenaline and money. So if you don't have the money, but you still have a lot of adrenaline, the cape is potentially useful. So we'll put it in there for like the mid tier folks, right? Get a ZGS sooner rather than later if you choose to melee a lot of things. But the cape is nice, yeah. Like you say, kind of one of those things. Queen Black Dragon phases have 25,000 health. It's one of those like an SGB or one of these specs. You're just like, oh, there's half of it. It's gone. Bye.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's good at it's very good at hard mode Karapak. Because the adrenaline is less of an issue.
And like, and once again, when
you watch,
or you finish your point, then I'll say what I was going to say.
Yeah. So if you watch Luca's melee hard mode rotations, he's using overpower pretty often when it comes up, just because he has the adren for it.
Luca is a magician who somehow generates more adren than I think is possible in a lot of situations.
What I was going to say was that when it comes down to it at the end of the day, we are dealing with these capes that the base capes come, of course, from Hurricane at the upgraded fight kiln in Tsar City, right? And then all you need to do is you need to defeat Zuck 3 times, which you can do with practice. And you got all of a sudden the best in slot capes in the game.
Right.
And I think that's also a worthy story of 2021.
And like Zuck is one of those things that for RS3, like I think most people who have done some amount of PVM, if you're comfortable at a Rakdos or at one of those equivalent level bosses, I mean, you have to kind of accept that you'll spend several hours prepping for Zuck if you're not a high tier PVMer. Like if you spend 6 hours dying to Zuck, you will absolutely get a kill and get the capes, right? Like it is something you can absolutely grind and do and learn. It is very much a learning process to get through those wave as well as saving supplies. So, go back, listen to the guy that we made on this.
Yeah, and you know, and that's exactly what happened for me on that is that it started slow. It took, like you said, a few hours to get the first kill. But lo and behold, we're at the point now where we're basically not using any food until we get to Zuck. And it just takes time and practice. But Melee, I think, ends the year in a interesting spot where a lot of you people on the high end, I'm talking to you, David, want something more for it going into the future. But I think Jagex is probably a little bit scared to give that to you.
See, I mean, I think they know it's a problem. I mean, it's bizarre that they released a best-in-slot weapon that A, has to be instantly put in an EOF, and B, is almost not even an upgrade, given that it's a direct trade-off with the previous best-in-slot weapon. So I think we need two things. I think we need planted feet to once again work with Zerk, and we need some way for melee to gain adrenaline. And I think those two changes will make it so we have three very similarly powered styles.
I'd agree with that.
All right.
And just to, like, as you mentioned, Shane, like, it's melee's just in a different place right now. Melee is very bleed focused. Melee is focused on doing a lot of damage over times and stacking them. Seems like, in terms compared to range and magic, which are focused on adrenaline generating tremendous amounts of adrenaline and then activating critical strikes as often as possible.
Respectively,
melee,
of course.
Still rewards those. No, yeah. Both of those. Okay. They both styles generate incredible amounts of adrenaline and use a lot of critical strikes. When used, I think, in the proper rotations. And melee just doesn't have the thing to synergize off of those. Melee does not generate the adrenaline or benefit as much off of the critical strikes, especially with all the bleeds. So it's a very different combat style right now, which is interesting.
All right. Well, Tanis, any thoughts, questions, anything you'd like to ask us?
Nope. I mean, melee is still probably as inefficient as it is. It's my style for Slayer.
Yeah, and it should be.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for Slayer.
Okay.
And I don't really do, you know, a whole lot else. The thing that, the reason I like melee so much is because it's the only, it's the only combat style that you can make your own stuff through.
Right, the tier 92 armor. Mm.
Yeah.
Even like the Masterwork Spear is all skilling. It's created through skilling. There's no PVM involved in that drop. Well, I guess the Masterwork parts of it, you do actually need Torva, don't
well,
you?
Well, yeah. I mean, you could G that if you wanted to, but...
But yes, like, I mean, the base spear even. Yeah. Tier 90 entirely off of skilling. No, it's true, yeah.
Right, and with that... And maybe we're underselling it a bit, because I think you could probably do any of the... You could definitely do any of the Elder God Wars bosses with, you know, a decent melee setup that doesn't have all those bajillion switches that we just talked about.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, it just won't be as good as, like, a budget magic setup.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, when I go to these things, I would absolutely just bring either a Lanikea or a, you know, pair of Drygors or something and be totally fine. I don't do melee with the 5 billion switches thing. I just don't. I haven't sunk the time into learning the combat style like that. But, you know, like David says, I show up with a tier 88 Ports Wand and Ports Orb and, you know, some Saren Animacore armor, and I'm outdoing his damage when he's camping a scythe or something. So,
yeah. And that's the story. It's just a question of relativity, I guess, between the styles. So, yeah. All right.
Pre-FSOA, it was good hybrid, but now it's, it's still good hybrid. It's just like, the one thing melee always had was burst damage, and now it is no longer the king of burst damage.
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned four little letters there, FSOA. We're going to talk about that in just a moment, but before we do that, I'll just thank our Patreon supporters for this episode. And this week, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Adris C, Arvid Zell, Christian S, Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plucks, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Elomady, Free Milk, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jeebus, Jesse W, Kesky Plays, Lucky Ducky, Nate the Great, Pernasius, Renhawk, Ricky A, Samuel FL, Scott DFs, Seth W, Singer, Stop Eve, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, Zachary M, and Zant. And this week it's a really big and special week here around Patreon, because we are closing in on that $200 mark that will unlock the next... Just hang on.
Well, Merry Christmas, everybody. Well, thank you for the support. While Shane's pulling out whatever he's looking for.
Thank you. Thank you. It's going to be quite the milestone, and I can't wait for you guys to see what we have in the works for that. But nonetheless, if you guys want to join us, help us get there, we're only a few dollars away right now. Probably have a preview for this in January, given that we're this close to it. But for as little as $1 a month, you gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits that raises a lot of questions and has a lot of fun discussions about core RuneScape. This past month, Tanis and I had one where we raised some rather uncomfortable questions, didn't we?
It was another good one.
Yeah.
So. Love them or hate them, it was a good one.
And there's so many like that, all available in the catalog. Perfect thing to do over Christmas. Check it out at patreon.com/rsbnb. But we also have the VIP tier for $3 a month, where you gain access to a special Discord rank and stereo versions of the show. And, of course, the Insider tier for $5 a month, where you get early access to the clips that we used to make the clip show at the end of the year, which is just around the corner. So you're closing in on another year where you're going to have early access starting from January. But nonetheless, thank you. Thank you, everybody, so much for bringing us this far. And we've got a lot of work to do in 2022, and it's going to be a fun one. So thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you.
All right. So, magic. Magic. We already talked about the Channeler's Ring. Or no, we didn't talk about the Channeler's Ring.
Not really.
No.
It got mentioned.
It's expensive. That's all we talked about with it.
Yeah, we're back at the Rex Matriarchs.
Hey.
So, I just need to point out, and, you know, reading the tin of this ring, the Channeler's Ring, even I know that this is one that people are going to be jumping up and down about.
Well, we didn't know that when it came out.
No, but we know now. Like, ooh. We know now. Yeah. 4% critical strike chance per hit when casting channeled magic abilities. So these are things like your greater concentrated blast, your asphyxiate. I don't know what the other ones are.
The biggest offender with this lately for the people with a lot of money is the Armadale Battlestaff, not to be confused with the Fractured Staff of Armadale. This is the Armadale Battlestaff that is received from 100 shards of Armadale dropped by the Glacors in the Glacor Cave after Ritual of Majorat. It is the longest, most number of channeled hits of a magic ability. I believe it's either 4 or 5. I don't 5. Use magic, clearly. 5. Yeah, which means the last hit of this has an additional 20% critical hit chance.
Sure does.
Sure does. Sure stacks nicely with some of the other updates to magic that have come out that we will discuss momentarily.
Yeah.
Can we just take a moment to mention how absurd this is?
If this thing came from a boss that was like Raksha difficulty, it'd be over max cash.
Yes.
Easily. I think easily over max cash.
Like we were saying, when the Rex Matriarchs were announced, I pre-bought a bunch of Seer's Rings. I bought 10 Seer's Rings for 200k apiece. Because I'm just like, I will maybe eventually want these. They're upgrades. I might as well just buy them because they're cheap. And I figure they'll rise. And I got this ring because I got the heart for it about a week after release for, I think, 2 mil. I think I spent 4 mil on this ring because nobody was using magic. It was Gricko was out. Everybody was selling their magic gear. It's a wild decision. And
You think you could have picked up appraisals for like 500 for the wand, 350 for the core at one point.
Absolutely. Less. The wand dropped down to 400. And the core was more. The core was more because people were buying them to use them.
That's true.
I think the core was
500. Yeah.
The wand was like 350. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm reversed, but still. Oof.
Yeah. No, and here we are. So yes, Channel's Ring, lovely. I don't have anything else on this, David.
So it's fantastic. Even if you can't afford an FSOA,
Fractured Staff,
if you can afford this, yes, if you can't afford this and an Armadale Battle Staff, or just like farm the Armadale Battle Staff yourself, or farm this yourself, I've done it on an Iron Man. It really does not take as long as you think it does. And you could kind of AFK. What's the name of our main friend?
Kings?
Yeah.
Thin,
but the
Thentraken. Oh, Thentraken. Yeah.
No, the king. Which king is it that drops it?
Oh, in the blue one. You just killed the
blue one. Yeah, there's a single square you could stand on that with Nox Bow range, you could actually AFK it. So it really is not that hard to get yourself. People just don't want to do it.
I think it's Supreme. I think it's Dag Supreme, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think
Prime,
it's Supreme.
I think Prime too. Is the range one.
Yeah, Supreme is correct. So even if you don't have the big weapon, this still makes the EOF by itself very, very strong.
Or the Armadale Battle Staff is a tier 88, which you can't use Greater Concentrated Blast, which we'll get to too, with it. But like, that's tier 88 with this is pretty good. Like, in terms of as a weapon that you can farm yourself. Given Ritual of the Majorette is pretty high rex, but...
And it's also worth noting that the fragments only come from the glacers in the cave and not the glacers on the glacier front.
Yeah, which is sad, but I don't know why that decision was made, but it's okay.
I think at the time the Staff of Armadale was, like, 18 mil.
Yep.
People didn't realize, like, it took people a while to figure out that the Channeler's Ring worked with that. Like, I think a lot of the special attacks that aren't regularly used have been taking a while for people to realize they're really good. Like, I think the same thing can happen with the Dragon Halberd. People are eventually going to get the word out there, and maybe more people will use it. But, like, right now, they're still cheap, and given they're sold by a store. But, like, I think it took, like, a month or a half or so for people to realize, one, the FSA... Well, because they took away the FSA spec. They re-added it like a month and a half later. So like once they re-added that, then it took a couple weeks for this to happen. So when the Glacier Wars first came out, the Armadale Battle Staff, the one that you make, was like, oh, cheap. You know, it was less than 50 mil, if I remember correctly. I may not know. It might have been like 70 or 80, actually. Because it takes a while to farm one. But like even then, it was... cheapish. And so, like, okay, it's in a reasonable place. There's no reason for people to want these, and now there is. So
let
maybe
me just summarize then the Channeler's Ring, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong on this. You combine the Armadale Battle Staff and an Essence of Finality with the Channeler's Ring, and you got an extra 20% magic crit chance. Yes?
Only on the last hit. So it hits five times. On the fifth hit, you do. Which those hits are not incredibly large on their own. Channeler's Ring is really good because it allows you to get crits. So you use it with that Armadale Battle Staff in the meta high tier scenario, which is what we'll discuss with this. So like, it gives you on average, you know, that extra it gives you an extra crit or so. Which a free crit is a free Fractured Staff of Armadale spec. Like, you get a free auto attack, which again, like, we're kind of mixing lines here, but that's. You get a free auto attack off of it, and that auto attack could also crit. The thing is that when this happens with the Fractured Staff of Armadale, which I'm just going to like jump into it because it's hard to discuss one without the other right now.
Yeah.
The Fractured Staff of Armadale's special attack, right? This would be the first thing. The next magic update that came out was... the ancient magic.
Yeah,
holy
we should
moly.
Talk about the ancient magics first, then we'll move on onto the Nodon
Front.
Let's combine these two just quick, though, because I think it is worth discussing them at the same time.
Go for it.
I'll go. The Fractured Staff of Armadale, every time the special attack on it, right, every time you critically strike, it fires an auto attack, which uses a ton of runes, just to be totally clear. It's very expensive to run this. It's an expensive staff to begin with. But the point to note here is that with the Staff of Armadale, the way that the Channeler's Ring stacks is that it adds a crit buff to everything that fires off until the next ability hit. And so when you're using the Fractured Staff of Armadale with this, your auto attacks that fire off at the same time as that last hit of the Armadale Battle Staff, the Glacier Weapon one, like, the last hit of that will have 20% crit chance, but also every auto attack fired off at that same time will have 20% critical hit chance. And so those autos can then crit again and cause more autos. And so it is very much a, like, self-replicating cycle that, like, promotes itself.
Does that feel like a bug?
No. The ring gives you a buff on your buff bar that says you now have this many more crit chance from the ring.
Yeah, and when they changed the staff, they explicitly explained their intentions, and that we know that this is explicitly intended. Now, whether that was a good idea is up for debate, but this is explicitly intended.
So, like, basically, this is you get increasing return on investment when you use channeled abilities with the staff because of the ring. because the ring effectively jumps you. The highest, I believe, possible crit chance in the game is either like 49, 47, 50. It's somewhere in the around 50% range. Using the channeler's ring with maxed other crit boosts and everything. And so you hit 50%, you can get a lot of extra like firings of auto attacks out of the staff. Of even though the fifth hit of the Armadale battle staff isn't big on its own, so when it crits it doesn't do terribly much more damage, but you also can get one, two, like you'll average I think two additional auto attacks off of that last hit at 50% crit chance. That's how that math works out recursively. Recursive, that's the word I think. You get recursive.
Yeah,
game.
Recursive. So,
yeah. Anyways, yeah. So that's why the Channeler's Ring is really disgusting. And that Channeler's Ring will also, when we talk about Greater Concentrated Blast, which I will not bump ahead, Channeler's Ring also works with that in that is three hits. So the third channel hit of that ability will have 12% additional crit chance, and you're using that every 5 seconds. So Channeler's Ring, having that extra crit chance, couples with the staff very well to give you quite a few more critical hits than you would otherwise get.
And once again, I feel like we didn't know this when the Rex Matriarchs came out.
Well, we didn't
know that like, they were going to literally give we us going. An older artifact.
Yeah.
Magic was kind of in the trash bin, and at that point, the Fractured Staff of Armadale... Wow, the Armadale Battle Staff, sorry, with the special attack might have just been doing more damage than a Nox staff with this, but again, nobody was going to do that math. Everybody saw the string and was like, oh, crit chance. I guess that's cool.
I checked the graph, and it went from 15 mil to over 200.
It was 15 mil. Okay, I thought it was really cheap.
Yeah, I looked. It was 15 mil before this stuff came out, and now it's over 200.
I'm going to price check this real quick.
And this is really interesting to me, because when you look at this, I remember back in the day when we first started talking with you, David, having you on the show. We were in the era of C4TAA, continuous 4-tick auto-attacking, and then later 4-tick auto-attacking. And you used magic as the sweaty combat style to get the obscene high amounts of DPM,
like,
and of course, that was then changed over to ranged and Greco and whatnot. But now here we are. We're actually talking about doing this sort of thing legitimately with magic.
Yeah, they gave us a way, way, way better version of C4T that is easier to use.
C4T was almost impossible without macros. You had to be much better than Tick Perfect to be continuous. 4-tick auto-attacking is one thing. Continuous was actually disgusting.
There was someone who was doing it with without any key-bound weapons. She got good enough clicking. To do it.
Yeah.
Do it just from clicking. So it is possible. Just like you just like, spend,
really need a new
spend
mouse
a bunch of hours at a dummy. Yeah, I actually went through 4 mice during the C4T era because I hit it's like every mouse has a certain number of clicks in its lifetime.
I hope they weren't scimitars.
Every one of them was.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Well, they gave me a new one though because I would like burn through a scimitar in like 2 months, and they sent me a new one. Like,
we're talking about the Corsair scimitar gaming
months?
Mouse that has a value of about $120.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. I went
and for clarity,
four.
You need to have like the inputs for continuous 4-tick auto attacking. You are switching roughly every ability, your wand, and back to your staff. So in 3 game ticks, or in, I guess 4 game ticks in this case. Or like reapplying yourself to the boss and swapping weapons twice so that you can fire auto attacks out of your staff and use your wand. Like it was disgusting. It was
all right.
Bad.
Did you get the price check?
Oh, it's a little under 200. It's actually dropping recently.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
177, but it was 200 a couple weeks ago.
All right.
Oh, okay.
So anything else on that synergy, or do you want to move on to the ancient magics now?
We'll come back to
ancient magics.
The ancient magics are humongous. There's two big pieces here. Yeah,
it's like
just go for it.
I don't know. It's fine. Yeah.
All right, I'll take it then. And you know, this came from a quest of all things, City of Sintistan, the ancient magics there. I think the one that everybody jumped up and down the most about was Animate Dead, which made so many things easier. in that it effectively provided a flat-up damage resistance buff based on the number of pieces of tank armor that you're wearing in their armor stats. And, you know, even to this day, whenever I go to one of the Zuck runs, that's what I do with magic. And I think this also was the point at which we started to see magic being nudged into that tank category officially.
Which is so wild.
Because what other game is magic? Is your mage your tank?
No, nowhere. Yeah, everywhere else, mage is squishy. They're the people in cloth armor. For us, our cloth armor just happens to have a ton of gems on it. It's hilarious to me that our given melee has trim masterwork, and so melee can be tanky, but in terms of purely mitigating damage, magic is by far and away king right now. Even without the upgrade to like crypt limit or everything, which again we'll get to, jumping the gun, but like the
I painted a good picture on that after, but let's just, you know, put anime dead off to the side. Made things a lot more tankable. Exsanguinate, how do you guys feel about this one? This powerful blood and single target
for most
spell.
For most high level rotations, it's not really used. It could be like rotations can probably improve with the use of it. It's definitely really, really nice if you're
optimally
budget. Yeah,
the stacks on it don't fall off for 20 to 30 seconds, so which is five times the amount of time you need to swap to. Like, optimally speaking, that 12% additional damage on basic abilities, like, reasonably compared to all the other damage you're doing on magic with auto attacks, especially these days, 12% basic ability damage isn't huge. This is the Slayer ability. This is a huge upgrade to Slayer, to me. That's what this is used for. Because you can kind of sit at 12 stacks on yourself and never really need to consume them. And have very cheap rune cost for Slayer.
And dare I ask, how do you do that?
I mean, you're just... So it's... I think we need to have a conversation at some point later. We'll do a show on ability rotation building. You build a magic ability rotation that never uses rack.
Okay.
It is absolutely doable. You need to be either paying a little bit of attention or have a lot of ability unlocks. If you throw all of your other basic abilities onto a bar and you want to revo this, you can, like, with Sacrifice and Tuska and Corruption and Econk, which, again, this is the one time when, like I said, channeled abilities take an extra tick afterwards as a pause, and so you can kind of leverage that to extend your ability to bar to be longer than it otherwise would be.
Right. Okay.
Which loses you a good bit of damage, especially if you're using it regularly. Putting greater concentrated blast early on a bar and doing those things, you can pretty easily avoid rack.
Yeah, and I imagine Magma Tempest will of course come into that later with an interesting discussion when we get to that.
Not point. Needed. I actually did some testing. Okay. It's not required. It does help. Anyways, yeah. So we can have that conversation at a totally different time. But
it sounds
like
a good thing for a micro lesson.
Exsanguinate, very useful for Slayer. It does good damage. If you swap to it every once in a while just to like use one spell, use one ability on that, and then swap back to Sight Fear, which we'll talk about next, I imagine. You can keep both abilities fully stacked and get the benefit of both. That is very sweaty. That is like napkins under elbows levels of sweaty. but for the people, if you really want to put out max damage, that is a thing that you can do. I've been a lot of places camping Exsanguinate for the low rune cost, and then for bossing, like God Wars 2 kind of tier bossing, where I'm just bringing a wand orb and a shield and like not worrying about crazy switches or anything.
Yeah, and
on 4 ticket.
You know, let me actually say this. Last time I went to do the Dinosaur Slayer, no, it was the Vile Blooms. I did the exact same thing with Exsanguinate, and I just removed Rack and Rune from the bar. And it was good.
Yeah,
enough.
You gotta be. You do have to be careful with those bars because you will lose a lot of damage if you start auto attacking. But again, thing for a different day.
Yeah.
The bottom line with this is like you can just camp Exsanguinate for low cost of use, and like once a minute, I was swapping for like I think like 5-10 seconds over to Incite Fear, and you know it would stack itself up in like a greater concentrated blast, which is 3 hits, and you know a couple of other basics, and then just tsunami, and then just swap back. Like once a minute, very easy switch. Like this is if you wanted to get into switching and getting used to switches, once a minute switches are the way to do it. And so those kind of spell switches or planted feet, very low input, but you get a like saving 60% adrenaline and getting a free tsunami, which then will give you a bunch of adrenaline back as you crit. It'll give you 10% adrenaline, right? Yeah, spell switching with these is low effort but pretty good damage increase. That's what I think.
And of course, we've been dancing around this for a few minutes now, so I'll just say let's talk about Insight Fear, because that lowered the adrenaline requirement for Tsunami. Has a 5x5 AoE passive that deals damage up to 8 enemies. And, you know, you can combine that with Tsunami, Greater Chain, Dragon Breath, and everything else, and you get this interesting magic AoE setup.
Yeah. I'm interested to see kind of David's take on this. The high-tier PVMer opinion is, and I think you can just say it's true, is the Insight Fear is the stronger, if you're going to camp a spell, Insight Fear is the stronger of the two. That 5x5 AoE is huge! One, it can crit on 8 targets. So there's that. We're talking about crits, that's a thing. And then just like having Tsunami be cheap saves you a ton of adrenaline, and Tsunami, like we said, gives you a ton of adrenaline. So this spell is the reason that magic has adrenaline to burn on special attacks and other things right now. This spell is it. It's the like the ability to use Tsunami on cooldown and not spend a ton of adrenaline on it, and generate a ton of adrenaline by critting with the Tsunami buff active. It's adrenaline generating a ton of adrenaline for magic.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of PVM, it's no other spells even close. If you don't have a staff, a fractured staff, but you want to do mage, it's Insight Fear by itself with nothing else is still really, really good.
And I will say that I can second that. You know, just using a tier 90 wand with the tier 88 ports offhand in all the Zuck runs I've done, that's been the exact same setup that I've done as the AoE setup that's been described here. And it, hands down, you combine that with, as we mentioned, Corruption Shot and Greater Concentrated Blast, which we'll talk about in up next, actually, is actually pretty darn good. So,
just like if you're talking single, like from the outset, from like the outside, I guess, looking at these spells, like Exsanguinate in theory has really good single target damage, and it's not until you get that adrenaline buff from Tsunami that you realize that Insight Fear is actually just better damage overall. Insight Fear otherwise is like, I get to use Tsunami and I get this AoE, the 5x5 AoE.
Yeah.
Those two things are just like, okay, I have good wave clear. But if you're on something like Vindicta, where you're only attacking a single target, this seem a little lackluster, but again, that adrenaline buff, like that is, it's the hidden bonus from this that is tremendous. So that's where this is the winner for.
Yeah, and you know, once again, it seems like that word adrenaline keeps popping up in all the different three segments that we've done. So
adrenaline is damage. Yeah. Adrenaline is damage. That's what it is.
2021 is the year of adrenaline for sure.
That's and actually crits. A really interesting way of putting it.
And crits, which crits generate adrenaline because Incendiary Shot and Tsunami exist.
Smoke Cloud.
Smoke Cloud's good. You should use it. There's no reason not to. It's cheap to use, and if you're going to Vuln, you may as well Smoke Cloud. It's not as good as Vuln, obviously. It's about a 3% damage increase, I think. It's good.
Rock Styles. It's great for magic.
Yeah, Smoke Cloud is the one that increases your max hit, I believe, right? Or what does it do? I don't know what it says.
Yeah, it gives you like 3-6% damage increase. It gives the other people who are attacking a boss 3-6% damage increase, depending on which style you're using.
Yeah.
It's good. I mean, it's one of those things kind of like Vuln Bombs. You just chuck it on a target once a minute.
Okay.
Yeah.
And once again, further pushes magic in towards that tank support kind of class.
And I know this is locked by Livid Farm, but because it's here, I believe you can stick it on. They made it so you could stick it on borrowed power, so you can use vulnerability bombs and use borrowed power, so you don't even need to spellbook swap if you're using Lunars for Disruption Shield or for something else.
Oh, yes, I did see that. That is true.
So borrowed power, it just costs you a couple of extra runes to chuck a Vuln on this or chuck a Smoke Cloud on something. It's good. Yeah, it's fine.
All right. Then, of course, we pivot over to the Nodon front. I'm going to quickly mention the Karabak wrist wraps, Tier 85 magic power gloves. After using Dragon Breath, they buff the damage from combust by 25%. And when these came out, I think what we said on the show was that they should be used if your target is not poisonable and you're doing magic. But now, David, you feel otherwise?
I mean, I think it's obviously kind of sweaty. They're good enough to justify a switch.
Okay.
Glove switch.
Emphasis on glove switch.
But like, I don't know. I mean, you don't have to do that. Use Cinder Banes if choosing between the two, obviously. But they're very, very strong.
It's free damage if you want to dismiss.
They're
hell
of a lot. If you're a budget player, they're way cheaper than Cinder Banes. And not as good, but still very good.
These are the magic equivalent of Nightmare Gauntlets for ranging.
Way cheaper and better.
And I think, and I could be wrong here, I believe that it's not in the tooltip, but I believe these have an accuracy buff as well to one of the abilities they impact. I think it's like either 10 or 25% accuracy buff, which is huge. I think so. I believe, which yeah. Combust doesn't...
That's interesting
anyways,
that would be... Kind of under the table.
I believe they were coded in a similar way, so that actually all the Tier 85 gloves, similar to like how the know for a fact that the ranging boots, the fleeting boots, have from Raksha have an accuracy buff to rapid fire, which isn't stated anywhere, but they are coded the same way as the Nightmare Gauntlets in terms of allowing you to move while using the ability, and they just copied over the accuracy buff as well. I do not believe that was ever removed, and I know it was present. So, but anyways, these gloves are good. If your target is poison immune, you don't have Cinder Banes, they're awesome. They're power armor. It's one of those things that, like, there are, I think, occasionally times when Dominion Tower gloves are potentially better than these, and we'll come back to those. I'll mention them again in a minute. So we can table that. But good.
I think that if you're very low budget, I would buy these before upgrading from Subjugation to Tier 80 Power Armor. They're very nice.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And I would even potentially buy these prior to Cinder Banes if you're doing a lot of magic on Slayer and stuff. They're really great for Slayer because they allow you to just do some extra damage. Great. Great ability. All right. We didn't have a lot to say on these in the first place. They're good damage. That's the thing.
Fairly simple. Okay, Greater Concentrated Blast. And this was, I think, when things really started to change when we had these discussions when the Nodon Front came out. Does a lot more damage than regular Concentrated Blast. Does it one tick faster? And at the launch of the Nodon Front, we were of the opinion that if you took a Greater Concentrated Blast magic setup and you compared it to a range setup where there was no greater ricochet, you'd feel that you had more power with the Greater Concentrated Blast.
Yeah, way better. I mean, it was arguably about equivalent to Greater Ricochet, even if you had that, but certainly way better than no Greater Ricochet.
Like, the things to note with this ability is that it is channeled, so if you don't cancel it, if you don't queue an ability afterward, if you don't use an ability directly when it finishes, your character will pause for a game tick. So it will be take 4 ticks with Greater Concentrated Blast, 5 ticks with regular Concentrated Blast to use. So Concentrated Blast is not an efficient ability on its own in any way, shape, or form, because it takes, again, on Revolution, it takes 3 seconds to use. It's those 3 hits. Greater Concentrated Blast does 50%-ish more damage, just flat out, when it hits things. Those hits come out one tick faster, so you can use it in 1.8 seconds when you cancel things afterwards. So effectively, if you use the ability queuing system in the game, which has a history of glitches we don't need to go into, frankly. I have it on currently because I enjoy it, but it causes problems. That should just be noted. If you use ability queuing, you can queue an ability to go off. You don't need to be precise or tight with your timings. Just whenever your Greater Concentrated Blast starts, you just click another basic ability, the next one on your bar, the next one that you should be using, whatever it is, or your threshold, and it will just fire off when Greater Concentrated Blast is done after 1.8 seconds. It will skip that extra tick. It's saving you a bunch of time and doing more damage. This ability is nuts, disgusting, broken, everybody. This makes mid-tier magic better than mid-tier all of the other styles, in my personal opinion. Like, if mid-tier, we're going to say you've got, like, 500 mil to spend on gear, this is one of the things, even if you have, like, 300 mil, like, I would
so
use this.
I can actually make it a bit simpler for you. I've been, you know, with this talking magic setups, Sirion had some questions on this. He said, what should I do based on this magic setup, based on what you've been doing with the God Wars fronts? I told him, go buy Corruption Shot, go buy Greater Concentrated Blast.
Corruption Blast. Yeah. And the thing to note with this is that description of the ability, it, in addition to doing more damage, it also, and this is regular and Greater Concentrated Blast, but again, regular Concentrated Blast, it takes so long to come out, you don't want that third hit. Greater Concentrated Blast, you do get the third hit. Each hit gives the next hit after it 5% additional critical strike chance. So, we lost somebody.
We lost David.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay, so it gives each hit additional 5% critical strike chance, which, it's a channeled ability. It stacks with the channeler's ring. So it effectively gives, this is a little funky because it gives a crit strike to the next hit and the ring gives to the current hit. But we can just say each hit of this ability is 9% additional critical strike chance off the previous one, which means that on average, this thing is like...
And that's with the channeler's ring, right?
With the channeler's ring, this ability has an average of 18% higher critical strike chance than any other ability in your rotation. And again, those are forced critical hits.
I think I want to pick up a channeler's ring.
Really expensive, once again.
Yeah.
230 mil we're talking about. Anyways, but channeler's ring plus this, you're suddenly, your critical strike chance is, like, you hit three times, and those three times have 18% higher average critical strike chance than all the other abilities around them. So, like, running forced criticals, and because forced criticals, it does with this ability about twice the damage it would otherwise deal when things crit. So, like, half of the ability hits in your rotation are suddenly being able to deal like 20%. Like, it's, I'm jumping, my brain is doing 5 billion things at once. The crit chance on this is significant. It will increase your damage just off of the crit chance alone by almost 10% if you use this every third ability and you cancel the ability after it. Like, it is, or you activate the ability immediately after it finishes, like I should say. Like, it, this ability and the crit chance stacking with the channeler's ring and the, like, increased damage and the decreased time, the regular concentrated blast is almost not worth using. It is pretty much unquestionably the second worst basic ability in the game on Revolution. It is terrible.
What is it better than?
Uncancelled Fury. Melee ability Fury, unupgraded. Unupgraded is worst. But yeah. And suddenly this ability is better than everything, potentially including Corruption Blast, which is previously Melee's or Magic's best basic ability. And so those two are kind of vying back and forth. I probably need to do some more math between them. Corruption also can't crit, so you don't want to use it right after this. So you kind of want to put Corruption first and then this second on your bar if you're using Revolution. But it is just... Actually, the first hit might be able to crit. It might be one of those funky abilities. Brain doesn't do enough magic math. But regardless, like... Greater Concentrated Blast is really, really good. It's really, really, really good.
And lo and behold, what this has done, and I'll just simplify this, is that if you don't have the money for Greater Ricochet, which a lot of people don't, we need to be 100% clear on that. Greater Concentrated Blast just brings magic up so much.
It is almost an equivalent damage boost to Greater Ricochet without needing to re-perk your gear. It is. Greater Concentrated Blast alone, when we came into the Elder God Wars, magic was doing meta-ish, right? 20-ish percent less damage than the other two styles. With Greater Concentrated Blast, covered most of that gap just on its own. Like, it is a 10 to 20% damage increase to the magic style just as it stands. Nuts.
But, you know... That wasn't enough for magic, was it? Then comes the Fractured Staff of Armadil from Hard Mode Care Pack that, as we already mentioned, fires off basic attacks whenever you crit. So we've been talking about that magic crit build. Channeler's Ring, Tsunami, Greater Concentrated Blast. Combine that with the Fractured Staff of Armadil. And I believe David has found his new friend at the high-end PVM spectrum. Yes?
Yeah, I mean, this is a probably was a mistake. Because Power Creep is good for games. No, because Power Creep is good for games. It's important. You have to have it. This is like, I don't know, just a whole new level of Power Creep. The things that are possible with this are kind of nuts. Basically, even someone who doesn't know that much about PVM but has a lot of money for some reason, like if you're a merchant or if you spend a bunch of money and buy yourself some green Santa hats and then sell them and then buy this staff.
You think magic is cool and you get a die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could very, very easily do 500k DPM even with relatively simple rotations, very little switching of any kind in a Staff of Armadil spec.
Normal mid-tier DPM, damage per minute, for the record, is about 250,000. Like, doing 250,000 as a mid-tier PVMer is pretty darn good. Like, if your gear is 500 mil, that's like the type... That's the like tier of people we'll say belongs in here. Your gear is about 500 mil, and you should expect to do 250,000 damage a minute, give or take 50,000, depending on how good you are with using your ultimates. This thing will, almost doubles that. Like, overnight, Karapak was... We came into the Elder God War saying, magic is weak, please send help. And they gave us Karapak as the first boss and said, here's help. And we said, oh god, too much, send help.
Like, no, turn it back. The scene of Endgame where all of the Avengers appear out of the portals is basically what Jagex did for Magic.
It's just, everybody's here now.
So on one hand, you have it being a tank class, and then on the other hand, you got it doing this obscene DPM.
Right.
Yeah, it's the best for tank, best for burst damage, best for damage over time, and best for AoE.
It's like... Some of the things we're going to be talking about. Yeah, I don't know. We've mentioned a lot of fractured stuff. I kind of want to talk about tanking stuff.
Yeah, let's move on from that, because I feel like we've talked about the mechanics of the Fractured Staff of Armadil, and we are actually pushing up on the time limit of this show. I did anticipate a half hour for each segment, which we did do for melee and ranged, I will say. Magic has been the one that's carried on a long time. But let's just have a quick chat about Crypt Bloom, then. Unless you have anything else you'd like to add on the Fractured Staff, David.
I could do it later. I don't think so right now.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah. Okay.
So Krosis, Crypt Bloom armor, tier tank, tier 90 tank armor.
Tier 90 tank armor. It's accessible to the people who want to buy their gear instead of doing raids. Raids was the only other tier 90 tank armor available in the game. I guess other than Elder Rune, but Elder Rune isn't augmentable, so
yeah,
it is much less useful.
Can't really compare that.
Crypt Bloom, it's got a passive that several passives. One of them is useful in situations that I'm going to say include only a couple of raid bosses and AOD, maybe one or two other places where you're doing group PVM in a large group, maybe large group select.
No,
I don't think so either. So, like, you wouldn't want to sacrifice somebody being in power armor for this. The biggest thing here is it has damage reduction on it, attached to it. If you're using earth spells, that damage reduction goes up a little bit. Wearing two or three pieces, you get up to, damage reduction specifically against melee and to a lesser degree against magic. Very useful for a lot of bosses. A lot of bosses attack primarily with those two combat styles, especially for the base tank role. Most bosses, in fact, I don't know. There's all one attacks with range. Anyways,
well, Yaka attacks with range if you're not MD.
Yeah, so
but you can just wear this and go MD, and
yeah, you can MD being melee distance. This offers a very large damage reduction, and that stacks with a lot of damage reduction magic already has, including things like we mentioned earlier with Animate Dead, which reduces 75% of hits up to a certain cap. But that applies after all other damage reduction has been done. So you add in somebody is using Earth spells on the boss, or you are using Earth spells on the boss, you get 5% less damage from the spell for most Earth spells. You stack that on top of this, you stack that with perks, you stack that on top of what other damage reduction? Like potentially Emerald Spirit Shield. I mean Emerald Aurora or Smoke, I think it's Smoke, right? It's the Earth type ancient magics. Both of them do a 5% damage reduction. We're going to assume that there's not going to be somebody using a different one of them. It's just you are using an Earth spell, which is 5%. So you stack all these things together. You can reach on magic without using a defensive ability above 95% damage reduction, which is to say, and before basic abilities.
For it. Yeah, Staff of Light spec
decreases damage by 50% against melee, costs 100%, can be used once a minute, lasts a minute, can be constantly running, and can be used with any weapon equipped if it's in an EOF. So if you stack all these things together, you can pass 95% damage reduction on magic without defensives, which is ridiculous. Once you get hit by damage larger than 8,000 damage in a single hit, you finally pass the Animate Dead cap, and you cannot reduce damage by that much when you're getting hit by over 8,000 damage, which is specifically for base tanking a few places and, like, the Kalphite King, and kind of nowhere else. So, like, you can do really massive damage reduction on magic with these things without even necessarily using a shield. That's Cryptloom is just like an extension of like, here's some additional.
Did we ever figure out what the rationale behind them doing this was?
I think they were looking for rewards to give us. I believe Sponge mentioned it on a couple of streams. Like, he was just looking to design spells, and this spell seemed really cool that, like, we can reduce damage from stuff. And then he was designing armor, and he's like, okay, well, this Cryptloom seems cool. And, like, at that point, we'd only just rebuffed or re-added the spec to the Fractured Staff of Armadillo, and people were just like, the design for this armor went in prior to people realizing that it was disgustingly broken. Staff was. And so the armor got released in addition. So magic continues to get buffs. Cryptloom is the tank armor. I think there is some situations where you would still want pieces of the raid's armor to get defensive resets, but if you're just camping for base tanking or something.
Kind of, but the damage reduction is so good, you basically don't even need to use defensives anywhere.
Yeah, and you can still wear two-piece Cryptloom and three-piece Octo and just bring, like, again, you don't because you want to be wearing Cinderbanes or other things. Like, most people don't wear more than three-piece tank armor for...
Yeah.
Anything, your rage armor is effectively a switch now to get repeats if you're on magic and have two bill to spare on this Cryptloom, which I think is dropping now because they just changed the drop rates on it. But time will tell on that one.
Increase slightly. We don't know what slightly is, of course.
Yeah, it's
they
still,
did say
the helm top and legs are still a ton.
Yeah, and I saw a note on Reddit from AJ mod saying that they're planning to release Elder God Wars drop rates this week, which they're out of the office after this week, so maybe not. I don't know. We will be getting drop rates soon, now that they seem to. I'm thinking that the patch notes this week were probably the final adjustments for them.
Yeah.
So we'll be getting rates pretty soon, so we'll be able to see what that looks like. Regardless, Cryptloom's really good. You can get really high damage reduction on magic with this. Magic is our tank class now. It's great. Even just to use, like, other armors, other just tank armor, like, or armor, whatever it is, to just learn content, because you just don't need to worry about taking damage, unless you're being hit by very large numbers. So, Bloom is busted damage reduction, allows you to do some pretty silly things, but just not take damage for them. Ignore a lot of boss mechanics, whatever it is. So, that's cool.
Before we move on to the Zuck rewards, I'll also just say this year we had a patch note where a bunch of the spells were buffed to tier 99 damage, so they would scale. Previously, they stopped scaling around the 80 range, and these are, of course, the Aurora spells that I mentioned, the Blitz and the Barrage ones. Blitz scaled 92, and the Barrage now scaled 9 to 99, of course, and the reason that's important is we now have a tier 95 staff. So,
yeah.
All right, Magma Tempest. Our discussion on that episode, rumors of its death, greatly exaggerated after it was nerfed.
It's still dead, Jim.
You serious?
Very clear. It was incredibly good. Now it is useful.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's better than useful. It's like, at least at worst, it's like a top three Magic basic. It's pretty good. It's still, and also,
I think so.
Yeah, and plus when you fire it manually, it like lets you do, there's a couple things. Every time you fire it manually, it automatically comes with an auto with it.
Oh, I didn't realize it threw an auto in there.
Yeah, so it's coded the same way as defensive, so it's a lossless auto, and it's very nice because you can drop Magma Tempest the tick before a boss spawns, and so you're just like, you know, already getting some damage in. So that's
free.
That's kind of nice too. Okay. And it's like it's very good at Zuck, obviously, just because big AoE is nice.
So yeah, it's amazing for AoE. Manual version of it will get you a little more out of the AoE because you can plant it between things rather than on a target. So you can hit more things. You can kind of design it with that way. The manual version of it is also kind of, I mean, I didn't realize it through an auto. So the auto is a big deal because that free auto is an extra like 50% ability damage per take. Yep. So that probably does buff it up to top three when you fire it manually. When you're firing it on a revolution, and it also can activate poison 8 times. So without poison, without being fired manually, this is an entirely average basic. It does almost the same damage as your 5-second ability. It's not astounding, other than applying it in AoE. With the auto attack and on a poisonable target, this probably bumps up to, being top 1 or 2 even.
How much would you pay for it?
1.5, that's what it is.
The auto? I personally wouldn't pay more than a few hundred mil for this because I don't Magic like mad. Also because, again, like I say, it's useful for Slayer. I don't want to spend bills on things I use for Slayer.
All right.
Normally.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely get almost everything else before this, unless you are basically camping hard mode Zuck and that's like all you do, then prioritize this for sure.
All right. So it's not a must have, but it's definitely something that you guys both agree is in the useful camp then now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Useful, just not, no longer best. It was 2 weeks as the best ability in the game history?
Like, by a long shot, yeah.
Yeah, by a lot. Like it was pretty common.
It was like, it was rivaling, especially with a full Magic setup of top tier gear. It was like, it was probably knocking Greater Ricochet in its heyday out the water.
All right.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, let's, anything else on that, or should we move on to the cape? Because, you know, that's the one that everybody wrote home about when we started with Zuck.
Let's talk cape.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Omnipower, 60% adrenaline, hits 4 times. Fractured Staff of Armadil synergies. It was broken on the first week. It's been fixed. It still is useful. You guys enjoy it?
The first week it was doing 180% intended damage, which is it was doing well over 1,000% ability damage. It's just like, here's a free 20 cape. Slap them. That was a low roll. They fixed that like 4 days later. We're going to move on. Yes, it's really nice. It's a good, it gives Magic big burst damage on a hefty cooldown, 30 second cooldown. Give Magic this big burst damage and an adrenaline jump, which, as you've mentioned with Tsunami, Magic could use adrenaline dumps.
And the G-Chain synergy is magnificent.
Greater Chain,
behold.
Right. Right. So, yeah. Greater Chain, it allows you to do this on a whole group. Which, like, let's be clear that Greater Chain has always been able to do this.
Yeah.
And just people didn't have a need to like, up Omnipower or giant damage on multiple targets. Because you could have fixed G-Chain before and do similar things. But, like, not similar, but, like, a lot of damage. Not this much damage, but a lot of damage. What do I put with this? It's a good adrenaline dump. Lovely for Magic. It hits 4 times, which is 4 chances to activate poison, which is kind of a drop in the bucket in terms of its damage output, which is fine. But it's also each of those four hits can crit, so it works very nicely with the fractured staff.
Yeah, and with the whole greater chain thing, it can hit multiple targets if you use it after greater chain, if I remember that synergy.
If you greater chain Kuroming, you can use this ability and do 600% ability damage onto seven different targets. If you math that out, that is 4,200% ability damage, which means that you can do over 200,000 ability damage with a single ability if you have targets that can take that much damage. which is lovely and fun.
And
requires you to have the Kuroming perk and a whole setup.
Right, and it's like, what the heck is going on here?
Hard mode Zuck waves are a joy with G-Chain Kuroming plus Omnitower.
And this is why Greater Chain is still 400 mil.
Yeah.
It spent 11 months or 10 months being 115, 130k, or 130 mil, and it is now 3 to 4 times that because, you know.
People want magic.
People realize that one, magic is good, and two, this ability is, like, again, I think it's a little overhyped because it's not, most bosses are still single target and do not have adds, additional damage dealers that have tons of hit points. But, like, for specifically the Zook front and, trying to think of what other, like,
well, so we've got Solak arms and legs.
Solak arms and legs, yes, great.
True. Virago on Scopulous Week or Scopulous phase on hard mode.
Yep, true. Okay, fair enough. And those you don't necessarily need Kuroming for.
You don't need it at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't need, the only place you need a Kuroming switch is
Zuck.
Yeah, and like maybe there's I mean, you may as well bring it for AOD if you're like doing high end AOD.
True.
You can kill, you can hit all minions. Four of the majors plus plus AOD.
Yep.
All right.
And
this has led us into a position, I think, where you look at everything we have with magic, and for the top end of the PVM spectrum, and I might be in effect reading too much into our final conclusion here. But it feels like magic is once again at the top.
Yeah, no question.
Okay.
It's so I would say it's the best for tank, burst damage, and sustained damage. So I just put this in here, some world firsts. The combination of these allowed Virago to be soloed on all these, including Vitalis and Green Bomb. Telos, our friend Goat, did a complete tendril skip, which may sound like weird jargon, but basically tendril is the first mechanic of phase one, and then if you skip it on phase one, it's the first mechanic of phase two, and the magic upgrades allowed for such an enormous amount of damage output that you could skip so the first two phases of Telos have zero mechanics if you're doing an ideal magic rotation. At Solak, you can do the realm skip, so 300k damage in like, I don't know, maybe 20 seconds ish, 20 to 25 seconds. You can do that solo. And then almost every single world record has been done. So, for example, someone did the challenge mode Hellwear fight in under 12 seconds. So that's 300k damage in less than 12 seconds. So you could easily, in ideal conditions, right? So when you're not
very lucky, this is like very high rolls on very much luck dependent things.
Yeah. So very, very high rolly, but also not dealing with mechanics. You could hit 1 mil damage per minute in an FSOA spec, but the bare minimum
high highs to low lows.
Yeah, the bare minimum is about 500k DPM with magic.
With a good setup and fully knowledge rotation in gear. Without the fractured staff, magic would probably be similar par to melee, potentially range. Range might still be king, but it's going to be close. With fractured staff, just sets it so far off the rails, it's not even funny.
Yeah, I think magic and ranged are very very close to equivalent, and range is high rolly because of dynamic adrenaline. It's close. But I think magic is slightly better than range, even without it.
And I think people aren't using range optimally. I think even optimal use range, you'd be closing the gap a little bit. But optimal use range, like, I think a lot of people just aren't using the arrows where they should be.
All right.
And it's worth noting, a lot of things got really expensive due to this. So, you know, most magic gear has tripled or quadrupled in price. And then Water Runes got really expensive. Because
11 years later,
Insight Fear. So if you want, you can make like 35 mil an hour doing Water Runes or something like that. It's pretty funny.
That's quite the geyser. That's quite the geyser.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the last thing we didn't talk about is spells. So the like meta is Insight Fear, and then you switch to Blood Barrage during your FSOA spec, because if you don't, then rune cost can get up to 15 or more mil per hour. And the other thing about that is that Blood Barrage healing basically means magic, even at high level PVM situations like AOD, magic basically means zero food usage, because you're firing so many Blood Barrage autos that the healing from all of those Blood Barrage autos is more damage than even something like AOD is capable of doing. So it also is functionally a zero. It basically makes it so you're using zero food anywhere, because you're just doing more damage than bosses. You're healing more damage from blood spells than bosses are capable of dealing to you.
Okay. So before we wrap up and, you know, say where things were and where things wound up, I just got a bit of a miscellaneous grab bag here.
Yeah, these are important.
Elder God War scriptures. When?
I think they did a great job designing these. The big book is great for your skillers and whatchamacallit and clue scroll gatherers. And there's these other three. Wonderful and Jess.
Yeah, let me just say the way I see it, then you guys can tell me if I'm wrong on this. When high end, where AoE is needed, full, situationally best in slot, single target. Jazz, best budget option, but recently for high-end damage dealers, they can now take better advantage of it, especially this week, now that the calculations are done, after things like the damage modifiers from vulnerability and the like have been taken into account.
Yeah.
That sounds about right?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest points here, the Wen book, anywhere you're going to hit multiple targets, or your target isn't moving, the Wen book is probably your best option. Full book is on a single target, it's the highest potential damage. Well, it's the highest like math damage of them, because it's just, you know, your abilities will, their base value hit will be just 20% higher when it activates. And it activates more, it's active more of the time than the Jazz book. The Jazz book is better because it calculates at the end of everything, and it includes bleed. So the full book activates like a damage boosting ultimate, where it doesn't boost the damage of bleed abilities, and it doesn't boost some other like odds and ends like poison damage. The Jazz book will increase your poison damage. Every hit of damage that you do onto your target from any source whatsoever will activate with the Jazz book, which effectively means like melee abilities, where you're applying 5 billion bleeds to something that wouldn't be picked up by the other book, poison damage, those kind of things. You're running a very heavy poison ability, you're running a blood reaver, those kind of things. The Jazz book will be better for those situations, because even though it is like in a theory 30-50% less damage than the full book, in actuality is because it's active on much more things, it can do more damage.
Yeah. Even including Grimoire, Jazz is best in slot for ranged at places where poison works.
Yeah. Including Grimoire, I had not done that math. That I believe you.
Yeah, 100%.
That's quite the
obviously statement. Grimoire for magic, but for range specifically, because Greco gives you opportunity for so much poison, it's the best in slot ability where you can poison stuff in your user range.
I wonder how that works with the Deathspore Arrow crit calculations, but that is probably math.
I don't know. This is just like kind of
current use.
Current
use. Yeah. I absolutely agree. I can totally believe that. Yeah.
All right. So it sounds like then we got three actual usable books that are usable in many different situations that you could, in effect, use any one of them and still be successful. But if you wanted to, you can pick and choose based on your application.
And the Jazz book is cheap.
There's almost, for budget PVMers, there's almost not a single better upgrade that you could buy in the whole game than the Jazz book, given the price. It's so cheap, and you're just like, flapping on. Even if you're not really taking advantage of it, you're still just like getting a ton of free damage for like 17 mil.
It's probably similar damage to Cinderbane's in a lot of, for a lot of people who are using them. And, you know, a fifth the cost. So, yeah, that's great.
All right.
Just want to run down the list. Cease.
Yeah. Cease. You guys like Cease anywhere?
I have it on my bar.
An ability that just makes you stop. I use it at Araxor.
It's not useful, really, if you're not using Revolution. So,
yeah.
As a person who revos basics a lot of places, Cease is lovely for Virago Reflex, for Araxor Reflex, for occasional other places. It's a nice thing to have, but it's not really a buff in any way.
It's just more of a utility thing.
It's pretty useful at Telos if you're, if you like, so on phase four Telos, it's very important to phase at a certain time so that you have three auto attacks going into a font. So if you're about to phase Telos, you could use Cease to prevent yourself from doing that. So then he'll do another auto so that you get your special at the right time. I mean, that's kind of weirdly neat. It is kind of nice for that.
It can, in some situations, in some bosses, allow you to drop target so that you can eat without losing adrenaline. Or like there, I mean, there's some like funky back end stuff you can do with Cease, but meta wise, not incredibly impactful. It's a nice quality of life.
Now, what about the Gloves of Passage balance change?
Hey, they made them useful. They went from being 500k or whatever they were to being more than that, somewhat. Yay!
Somewhat.
So these are the, like, they tried to make them, and I think they succeeded in making very similar in line with, I think they're less impactful, but they are in line with, in terms of use, with the Nightmare Gauntlets and Carapax Wrist Wraps.
Okay.
These are the, like, on a non-poisonable target with melee, where you don't want to be using Goliath Gloves because reasons, like for maybe Slayer on some poison immune targets, these are potentially best in slot.
20% increased damage from bleeds for 10 seconds in one case.
Yeah.
After using Havoc or Smash.
Which, like, if you're on Revolution, you're not necessarily timing your bleeds for that. But, like, you could just set up a bar to have bleeds after Havoc. I mean, yeah. They're good. They're better damage than...
It's good with EZK.
It's good with EZK. They're, like, I would use... I personally will use these everywhere that isn't poisonable when I'm using melee. Like, I just don't think there's a better glove option. Like, if you really want the... I'm going to be honest. The bleed from Trim Masterwork actually kind of annoys me. Like, I don't, like, use it places where I'm getting smacked like that. Where it's going to save my life. It just kind of is annoying to have it always on. So I will use these over Trim Masterwork gloves most places. I think they're better damage output.
That would make sense. That would make sense. All right. Cleave and Sweep changes update. That was update episode 857 for the Dragon Halberd special. We talked about that a bit earlier. They basically took the two off cooldown, and this makes the Dragon Halberd special a good thing to put in Essence of Finality. Yep.
For reasons that were never clear to anybody, activating the Dragon Halberd special put Cleave on cooldown, and Cleave did the same thing for the Dragon Halberd, which... The Dragon Halberd does 230% ability damage, which is, like we said, a Dragon Claw will do 20% more damage than that to a single target as a special attack, talking about EOFs.
But it's more Adren, though.
Yes, this is 30% Adren instead of... Oh, Dragon Claws are 50, isn't it?
Yeah, so this is the best of the Dragon weapons for me.
Yeah. In addition, this also does AoE, so it will cleave, if you're wielding a 2-square melee range weapon, it will cleave everything in a 2-square range in front of you, the same range that Sweep has, or the same range as Cleave has, and it'll hit twice for the 230 damage, which means it can activate poison twice on all of those targets. It's very good, it's a very good special. People will eventually just have them in EOFs.
Yeah, they'll pick up on it eventually after they listen to this episode. All right. Just a couple other little things. Grasping Rune Pouch from Krosis. I think that's just
the quality of life.
Quality of life. Very little pickup. Pernix Quiver.
You save some soul runes. It's not nothing.
It's good. Like, it's a good little money save. And having a rune pouches that can hold 4 runes is really nice. It saves an inventory slot. which put a Switch in there, put a fish in there, whatever your choice.
Pernix Quiver? Quiver.
Yeah. Once similar again. For range. I think this is a little more impactful personally, given that given my opinion on the arrows being a little slept on.
Are you going to buy one?
I have two.
Oh, okay.
So yes, I bought one for my alt. There's a couple of things with the Quiver. The Quiver, obviously, it's really nice to switch back and forth between arrows and bolts. It saves you an inventory slot on having an extra ammo switch. If you want two of the same type, even two bolts, two arrows. And the interesting thing about it is that undyed Quiver, and without a Quiver, and as well as any of the Tyranuan Quivers, any ammo you have stored in them costs against your death cost. And the Quiver is like 1 GP, I think, to save. If you have a dyed Pernix Quiver, all of your ammo reclaim cost from within that Quiver is free. It is 1 GP to reclaim all of your ammo and the Quiver.
Huh.
Found that out today. So that's cool.
Is that supposed to be that way?
I don't know, but there's so many things that are interesting with the death system that we've already discussed recently that...
I don't know.
The dyed thing, for whatever reason, no longer accounts for the ammo held within it.
Okay.
The undyed one, without any ammo in it, does have a 1 GP reclaim cost. But it also has a cost added to it, according to... Given this is like 30k, like if you had a full quiver of like Araxite arrows, or even like expensive bolts, if you had a couple thousand Bicriminal bolts in there, the reclaim cost on it is like 50k, I think.
That's not much.
It's pretty cheap. So yeah. It saves you like 50k when you die, which brings us back to the thing I was mentioning above with the Stalker's Ring, where like range deaths aren't expensive if you're not using Elite Serenic and you're not using crossbows. Interestingly. So
all right,
save you a little bit of money.
And fine. I think you put this in here, Tanis, didn't you? Accessibility roundup, or are we talking about this from a different angle here?
Yeah, I had put that in there. And I think just the main points I want to address.
Yeah, please.
With what's left of the show is progress. Where we started with Elder God Wars was a little rough. And it kind of showed some of the limitations of what they can do to make RuneScape combat accessible in the first place.
Right.
Because
it's definitely not your experience that we had at Syria.
Well, right. But like, if you think about it, Care Pack was a very kind of traditional RuneScape in the vein type of boss. Mm-hmm. And it was very inaccessible for many of those reasons. But it started, you know, it started to get, I want to say better, but it actually, the next couple releases didn't really get better. They had their own issues. We had major contrast issues with the Glacier, and then we had major colorblind issues with Krosis. But I say progress because Jagex was listening, and they made some huge improvements by adding voice lines to the Arch Glacier. And then, you know, they've tried to address the colorblindness issue with Krosis. So I don't think we're there yet, but this is all like,
as
really
said, baby steps.
Good. Yeah, I mean, it's really good, and I'm really happy to see how it went. And then, you know, we kind of finish it off with the, what's his name? You know, the big boy, Zuck. Mm-hmm. And they really benefited by being able to have it where it was and the color scheme that they had, because it did make it a lot easier to see.
Yeah, and that was surprising, because on launch week, what wave was it that you got to again with that?
Didn't you beat it on release week?
I never beat the boss. It was the wave that had the, was it three chads?
Yeah,
three chads.
That's the second to last wave, so it's pretty, I mean, yeah, it's great.
And then all you would have had after that was Hurricane, which if you did Hurricane for the kiln, that would have been no problem.
Oh yeah, yeah. I used to do that.
And this Hurricane only shows up in two locations instead of four, so if you're using your screen magnifier, it's actually probably easier than the one in the kiln for you.
Yeah, that yeah, well, definitely. I'd only have to keep track of two.
I think you can get it done.
I might have to go back and just give it a shot. But overall, you know, I just think that they're being responsive, and that's all I could ever ask. There are going to be limitations with RuneScape combat and accessibility, just with the nature of the game and how it works. But you know, little additions like what they did with the Archglacier took it from one of the most inaccessible bosses and probably made it the most accessible boss in the game.
Yep.
And that was just you know, I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed seeing them do that this year.
20 straight minutes of voice lines played back to back to back that they recorded and put into the game for it. Just for the
is that really how long it is?
I saw somebody posted it in one of the Discords I was in. It's over 20 minutes long. It's about, I think, like 8 to 9 minutes of Ariane and almost 12 minutes of
Azenadra. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Because he speaks a little slower. But it's a lot of similar voice lines. But yeah, for every mechanic, they have multiple voice lines they can do. Anytime the boss hits you for a large amount, anytime you hit the boss for large amounts, they've got multiple voice lines. So
that's perfect.
They did it great with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's just unpack the winners of 2021 then. And we're going to do the mid-tier section, the high-end section. And I'm going to ask each of you, Thaxi and David, where did we start in 2021, and where did we end? So let's do the mid tier. Let's start with, you, David. Where did mid tier PVM start with?
Ranged, because back criminal bolts are real good. Ruby bolts hit hard.
Yeah.
You agree with that, Thaxi?
I do. I think melee was doing very well too. Like for people that truly enjoy melee and had trained a lot of melee, like had got to mid tier, have 500 mil worth of gear in melee. I think melee was up there, but it's just challenging to melee a lot of PVM. So, in terms of like learning new bosses and getting into PVM, I think range, as like David's saying, magic was struggling a little bit.
All right,
at all tiers.
And now focusing on the end of the year, 2021 mid range PVM, who wins?
So I kind of forgot about tier 88 weapons when I said ranged. So if you're assuming seismics, then I felt like that was outside of mid-range price-wise, since they're like a bill almost getting close to there. But factoring in tier 88, I would say magic. The argument I had for range was just that it's still, in my opinion, the easiest style to get competent at, to where you're like doing a reasonable percentage of the maximal output. Whereas I think even with mid-tier stuff, magic is still trickier to use. It's very clunky on Revolution to use magic, and ranged honestly is, especially now that like they're even removing stuff like the auto you would get with Tendril. Like ranged is very, very easy to use with Revolution. And so I think that there's an argument for range still, because Ascensions are kind of expensive and take up the bulk of the like 500 mil budget we're giving it. But I don't know. Well,
I think you could buy an Oxbow. Like I think mid tier range right now might not even include Ascensions. I think it might include an Oxbow or even a Desolation. Sure. And yeah, I think because the arrows, I think, are pretty good, and you can absolutely bring splintering arrows and like it's 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, right, to unlock things from if you already have, like if you're not getting the wave bonuses, it's a couple of weeks to unlock things from Shattered Worlds. And so I think range, that's kind of where we're at right now. Is Ruby Bolts are still pretty good, and you can use you know, you've got options for that. Even like the thing that magic has going for it right now, as like the comparison, is that greater concentrated blast is so incredibly powerful if you're not switching. Like range, I absolutely agree. Like you can mimic on range everything that the high tier people are doing with relatively few differences, right? You can, like, with the exception of like some very expensive Essence of Finality additions, you can do pretty much the same rotations and setup. You have to be a little careful with Revolution on range, because Snipe does need to be canceled Otherwise, you do waste a lot of it. Like, snipe is a kind of a questionable ranged ability.
Yeah, you could also just not use snipe, and that's
okay. You get on a revolution bar. You run the risk without snipe of hitting the end of your bar a lot faster. You need to have a wider revolution window. Snipe is the question, but in terms of like other than snipe and just which. For anybody who's curious what I'm talking about, snipe takes 1.8 seconds to fire. If you queue an ability while snipe is going, you cancel it after 2.4 seconds exactly. Actually, I think it takes 2.4 to fire. Otherwise you lose a tick. It's just because it's a channeled ability, you lose a tick afterwards. And you want to, like, that's a ton of damage lost every 10 seconds. Range right now still has Bacriminal Bolts, and so either Bacriminal Bolts or if you have the arrows, that's what I'm going to say is mid-tier for range, still doing great. Greater Concentrated Blast is so ridiculously broken overpowered that I would even be willing to say that for like mid-tier PVM, if you've got anything above tier 80, I would say you're probably putting out similar damage to a lot of range. People using like tier 90s.
So what's it going to be, major ranged?
I think you could use either and be fine. Honestly, like that's what I would end up with. I think mage was the winner of the year in terms of mage. Mid-tier players gained more from mage because Greater Concentrated Blast is disgusting.
Yeah.
So basically what you're saying is that...
Chins are still really good. If you like Elite Dungeons, chins are still great.
So we started where mid-tier 2021 ranged was... the be all and end all, but at the end of 2021, it could be either, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's probably magic. Honestly, if you have the ports weapons for sure.
If you're if you have tier 88 ports weapons and you have Greater Concentrated Blast, it's the winner. It is the best for 500 mil. Yeah.
All right, high end. What was our friend at the high end?
Yeah, I mean, range by far the best. Nothing else was close, and now magic by far the best.
Gricka was busted. Gricka was nerfed. Magic care pack now exists. Even without the fractured staff of Armadillo, it would be pretty close. I mean, again, we've spent a lot of time talking about this. I should note the fractured staff of Armadillo cannot use Greater Concentrated Blast. You kind of have to like have a switch there to use both of these things. So like both of these are huge power creep. They do not overlap,
and that's good.
And like you can't even, because the Fractured Staff Armadillo fires a main hand auto attack, you can't even put it in a Essence of Finality and use it with a Wand and Orb to use Greater Ricochet, to use Greater Concentrated Blast, because your autos do significantly less damage when fired from a wand instead of a staff. And still cost the same amount of runes, which is wild. So there is a trade-off there. Like they don't overlap perfectly. You have to do a lot of playing around. But if you're feeling sweaty, magic, and it's not close, is the best combat style right now.
Yeah.
Range people are still, I think, still figuring it out.
All right.
I mean, I think ranged is still really good. We haven't really talked about the in between. Like if you can afford, if you have 5 bill but not 12, then ranged is still incredible. I mean, I think there are a lot of players
still better.
Like,
absolutely.
I think a lot of players have gotten like 1/3 age die, but are nowhere close to like 15.
Okay, let me just rephrase this then. What are you guys using going into 2022 primarily?
I like range. I will always be using range.
David,
if I wanted to do maximum damage, I would be on magic.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain right now, I just PVM on my Iron Man. I don't have magic gear, but as soon as I do, I'll switch to magic.
Okay.
And then on my main, when I PVM on my main, I use mage. That's like once a month or less.
All right, and I am on ranged right now, but I'm nowhere near that 5 bill. High end. So I think we can.
You have 5 bill worth of range gear, Shane.
I do.
You bought Greater Ricochet not too long ago.
Yeah,
that's
but
included.
That's not 5 bill.
And that's close to 1.5. You're like, next thing we know, you'll be buying a Saren Godbow, and just those two things, your crossbows, and you'll be there. That's it. That's like you're already at
like 2.5 bill. So you're already halfway there.
Oh my god! Have I spent
Elite
that much?
Do you have Elite Serenic, Shane?
No. I'm using tier 82 power.
But he's got an EOF. You have like an EOF Ascensions in Greco, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's basically 2.5 bill.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Tanis, do you have anything else?
No. No, I'll be over here and punching things in the face with my melee.
Hell yeah, dude.
Hey, one day it could be good. We just need to get you like a little thing that gives you adrenaline every time you bleed, and you'll be partying.
That's it. We're one upgrade away from like, what is it? I think it's Meteor Strike that gives the adrenaline buff for melee. Like if they could give you something that does what Incite Fear does for Tsunami and just give that same thing to melee, melee's gold, dude. Melee is off to the races.
Alrighty, well, thanks so much everybody for being here. This was quite the episode. And we were discussing initially. Oh, should we put this in as an addendum to an episode? We can get it done in 45 minutes, right? No, we didn't.
Yeah, you messaged me like, oh, could we talk about PVM meta changes in like a segment? I'm like, I think we could. I think we could, but I think it would. There's also enough to fill.
Yeah.
All right. Just in the interest of time's sake, we do have two picks of the week. I'll just mention them quickly before we go. As this episode is releasing Christmas Eve, I have a very traditional Christmas video put together by the St. Paul's Church of Auckland, New Zealand, that tells the very traditional Christmas story. So give that a watch. And very quickly, David, what's your pick of the week? The Princess Switch?
The Princess Switch 3. This is the third film in the epic of our times. I think most people would describe it as analogous to Lord of the Rings.
Sure, a
genre definer.
Oh my god!
It's Vanessa Hudgens' third movie in which she plays both of the main characters of the movie. Where you know you've got your classic princess and.
Modern parrot
commoner,
trap.
Yeah, commoner switch roles and see if people notice and live each other's lives. And yeah, it's great. If you like movies that are designed to make you cringe constantly, then you'll love this.
Or if you have young daughters at home, let's be honest here.
Okay, I want to see this commentary.
Be responsible, but if you wanted to make like a drinking game out of this, there's a lot of ways to do that.
Tanis could show this at home.
Oh.
Like I said, I can't wait to see the social commentary.
Yeah, it's great.
This is what it's like to be elite.
If you love movies that are bad from the opening credits to the ending credits, you're going to love this one.
All right.
I'm sure there's somebody out there that loves this movie that is just very sad right now, David.
But like, it's endearing, you know? Like, all these Christmas
are
endearing because of their just disastrousness.
All right.
Not designed for an adult audience.
Indeed. Well, thank you, both of you, for being here and indulging us for 2.5 hours on PVM. You. Tanis and I did our best to guide this going forward, but if you have any questions, of course, join the Discord, rspmb.com/discord. Both these two are in there and we'll happily answer any PVM questions you guys have. And with that being said, have a Merry Christmas, everyone. Tanis and I will be back next week for the clip show. It's going to be a fun one. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See you. Ciao.